Can you describe its form?
No.
Start from the beginning.
Skip to the end.
Welcome to episode 92 of the Skip to the End podcast. As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Gemma.
And I'm Mark.
And I don't know about you guys, but I've spent the last 2 weeks at the Weetabix factory in Kettering.
I have. That is the best day out you could ever imagine. You think it's just going to be cereal. It's not. You go into the process of making cereal. You get to see how the conveyor belts box the actual cereal.
Yeah.
Right. Unbelievable day out.
You're more than welcome.
That's Weetabix.
But joking aside, one of us really did do something special in the last 2 weeks. Pooch.
Yeah?
I've heard a rumour that there's going to be a Mr. Pooch.
There might be.
Fill us in.
So Thursday, or a few days ago in Listenerland, I was celebrating my 6-year anniversary with Mr. Pooch. And he had a few questions on that day, and he had one in particular that ended in engagement. I'm going to get married, fellas.
Wow.
That's pretty damn good, to be fair, and I'm very happy for you.
Yes, congratulations, Gemma.
Thank you very much.
I want to ask you a question that I've been meaning to ask quite a while.
This is happening, and there's nothing we can do to stop
it. I've now got an excuse to ask you.
Oh, my.
So, will you please show me your ring?
Well, yes.
Please.
You're an idiot. Oh, that's beautiful.
Thank you. He liked it, so he put a ring on it.
Very good. Generally, I saw all the response on social media, and everybody, all our fans out there, were wishing you the best. So we're very happy.
We are. Thanks, we are. Guys. How did he do it? How did he pop the question?
We were staying in a little shepherd's hut. I was too busy getting ready and faffing around. So I was just about to open the door. He was outside doing this, that, and the other. So I was putting my coat on one arm in, had my bag. And at the bottom of the steps, he went, "I've got a question to ask you." Produced a ring, said, "Will you marry me?" Now, I don't remember what happened next because I still had one arm in my coat, so I looked like a bit of a hose beast, and my bag of contents just spilled out everywhere on the grass. But I remember saying yes, so that's the main thing.
Now, I assume that Mark and I are going to get invitations to the wedding.
VIP, baby.
Big time. But as we discussed last week, because of the whole designated survivor thing, I'm not entirely sure that Mark and I can both attend.
Oh,
so what you'll have to do is just invite the one you like the most. We'll leave
you
that with you.
You just go, dude. I'm not bothered. I'll have a day in my pants watching Netflix.
Wait a minute. The response when I told you guys I got engaged, Ben was like, "Oh, amazing. Well done, Pooch." To which Mark replied, "Who did you get engaged to?"
As if he's not met Greg several times.
Who?
I also want to address a second situation that I want to talk about in great detail. So here at Skip to the End, we have quite a strict policy of annual leave.
Yep.
Me and Ben seem to know what it is and stick to it quite well.
Always.
For some reason, Gemma thinks she can take the piss, you know, put in last minute requests. Really last minute, like, "Oh, actually tomorrow I can't make recording because I'm doing this or I'm doing that."
Oh, because I'll be in Las Vegas. Oh, yes. Cheers for letting us know.
Yeah. I don't think you've got any annual leave left for the rest of the year, so that's no wedding or honeymoon in my books.
No, definitely no honeymoon.
And if you are going to need extra time off, I think we should probably say goodbye to you. I know that's quite harsh.
Your wedding present is the sack.
So stay around for competition time on this episode where we're going to give away a podcasting position on Skip to the End.
Jesus Christ.
I'm sick to death of hearing about this engagement now. It's too much.
Yes, so am I. But we are genuinely, genuinely happy for you, Gemma. But there is bigger news than Gemma's engagement.
What?
Today, the day that we're recording the show, is Dad's birthday.
Yes, it is.
Wow. It is Kurt Russell's 67th birthday today. So let's all raise a glass to Kurt Russell's birthday. Not to Gemma's engagement, but to Kurt Russell's birthday.
What we got today is this Brothers
Always.
Hop Cider.
Lovely stuff.
Beautiful.
Yep. There you go.
And Gemma, well done.
Yeah, well done, Pooch.
Yeah, cheers for that.
What we got coming up on today's show?
So we're going to kick things off with our top three plot twists. So this is going to be a very spoiler-filled topic, but it's our podcast. Well, it's yours too, podcast. Might not be mine for much longer, but stick around.
Also, our rewatch on this episode is The Descent. Now, this is a film that means a lot to me personally. I know Gemma's a huge horror fan, but my God, I'm really, really curious if Ben likes it, because you're not a big horror fan.
No.
And you've not seen this film until this episode.
Correct.
Salmon.
Stay tuned for that. Our main review is Annihilation, which is interesting because it's a good thematic pair with The Descent, because both films are about groups of women entering into the dangerous unknown. So was that intentional, Mark, when you
picked The Descent?
Always. My ass.
Synergy.
Speaking of arses, for Movie Masturbate, we will be talking about our favourite Russell Crowe performances.
Very, very nice.
Synergy.
And it's our final round of John Trivialta, the biggest quiz we've ever done. And wow, the feedback's been absolutely huge. But now it's time to call it a day and have the final round, which is myself versus the recently engaged Pooch Master P.
And of course, we wrap up the show with all the usual shite that you used to. So the skip to the recommendations will give you, or we'll give you listener questions and give away some great prizes. All of that tasty business. Let's get started.
More enjoyable about watching a film, but when you watch a film and something unexpected happens, it can either lift it or it can shit it. But thankfully, on this topic, we're gonna be talking about our top three plot twists.
Can we do a quiz called Lift It or Shit It?
Always.
I like that phrase.
Banked. Anyone else who plays that, you'll get our lawyers. But in the meantime, we're going to be talking about our top three plot twists. This is going to be quite an interesting one because we're probably going to spoil a lot of films for a lot of listeners. But hey ho, who cares? Mark, can I have your first plot twist, please?
I'm going with a very, very obvious one that I've seen come through loads, but I have to say it's Fight Club.
Me too.
Brilliant. What a start. I think it's the fact it knocked me on my ass. When you're watching a lot of films, you can work out sometimes the plot.
Yeah.
I don't believe on some films like Sixth Sense and stuff that exists. Fuck off, did you work it out from the trailer or halfway through? That completely knocked me on my ass. But Fight Club is unbelievable as a film. One of my favourite performances by Brad Pitt and Edward Norton. And obviously when it's in the hands of David Fincher, you know it's going to be damn good. This film is something where I went to the cinema and watched it, and I think I must have sneaked in, so I was probably about 15, 16. I don't think I was old enough to go in and watch it, but yeah. It's that thing where you just kind of sneak in with your mate behind his jacket, and I got in.
What? How does that work?
You kind of sneak in and just don't look too young, you know. Just
I thought
kind
I
of...
had an image of, like, Inspector Gadget style, like one of you had a trench coat with a hat.
Yeah.
Like the character in BoJack Horseman.
Yes!
I still need to watch that.
What? You've
I know,
not seen it?
I know. But this film basically tells the story of an insomniac and how he basically forms his own fight club. He works in a dead-end, shitty office job and then basically leads to him causing anarchy. That's the best way to put it. His kind of alter ego, which is Tyler Durden, played by Brad Pitt, is one of the coolest motherfuckers. I've mentioned him before as being one of my favourite characters in film. But the big twist is that there is no kind of other character. It's himself.
Yeah.
Guys, please tell me it's not just me. I never saw anything coming. I wasn't looking for hints. I was just enjoying the film. Ben, I know you're a huge fan of the writer. Is it Chuck?
Chuck Palahniuk. Leave that one to me.
Chuck. And I never saw it coming. It completely, completely knocked me for six. And then it was one of those films I then revisited looking for hints.
Yeah.
And I still couldn't really see them. It's an absolute gem of a film.
There are some hints as you go through it again, but most of them are subliminal. They're like one-frame shots kind of give away that Durden was the narrator all the way through.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's one of those gut punch twists that I didn't see it coming either. As you kind of alluded to there, Mark, it pisses me off when people go, I saw it coming, I knew. Prove it. Prove it then. How can we possibly know that you're telling the truth?
Yeah.
You're just being a dick.
Yeah. Exactly that.
It makes you a film detective.
Yeah.
So as soon as you've had that bomb dropped on your ass, you instantly want to rewatch it again. And I think that's so clever of Chuck, old Chucky boy, to write that. It's fantastic. I never saw this coming either. This was a complete and utter shock. And it's one of those moments where you literally, you go forward on your seat going, what? I've been bamboozled. How dare you, mister? And I shall get you for all you're worth. But even Norton, over his narration, he goes, please go back to your seats. Basically, my whole ethos about choosing this is just like yours. I never saw this coming. This was a complete and utter shock to my system.
I've still probably not got over it today.
No.
All these years later, I still go and watch it and think, God damn it,
not
you're
at all.
A good fucking filmmaker. The editing on that film as well is exceptional. And the acting and everything about it. But the thing is, I'm not worrying too much about this topic because I think most of our listeners will have seen Fight Club. I don't feel too guilty. I've not picked this really underground film that people are about to discover. So if I have ruined it, fuck yeah.
Brilliant.
There you go. I love you all, really. It's straight to Ben, then.
It is.
And my first pick is Old Boy.
Oh,
what a choice.
The remake, yeah?
No. Not that absolute abortion of a film. The Korean original from 2003. So if you're not familiar with Old Boy, again, sorry for the spoilers, but it's the story of a man called Odai Soo, who is hunting down his captor after being kidnapped and held prisoner for 15 years. He eventually finds his captor, a chap called Woo Jin, who was a lad he went to school with. And Woo Jin's sister killed herself after Odai Soo saw the two of them committing incest. Okay. The big twist is that the woman that Odai Soo has helping him find his captor and then ends up having a sexual relationship with turns out to be Odai Soo's daughter.
Ew.
And what Woo Jin had done is basically hypnotize the two of them to bring them together, to make them fall in love, to basically create another incest situation as revenge for his incest situation. Yeah, it's fucked up.
Tad.
Just a tad. But it's, again, it's another huge gut punch twist. You just don't see. I mean, we say with Fight Club, you don't see it coming. You do not.
Never in a million years.
This coming.
Never eluded.
And then after the gut punch of the twist comes gut punch number two, which is where, as an act of retribution, Odai Soo decides to cut his own tongue out.
One of the hardest scenes I can ever put myself through, and I've seen some horrible films, but that is the most gruesome, disturbing, even just thinking about it makes me go, it's horrible.
I have a very high tolerance for that kind of thing, but that scene of him cutting out his tongue was up there with the scene I mentioned from Syriana last week with the fingernails being pulled off. Those two things, man, they skeeve me.
It's a film that stays with you for a very long time.
Yeah, it does. And that's not really the end of it as well. There's another, you might say, second major twist. When Odai Soo finds out that he and Mido, his daughter, have been hypnotized to fall in love, and Mido still doesn't know this at this point, he decides to go back to the hypnotist so she can make him forget that he knows that it's his daughter, so that the two of them can then live happily ever after. And he gets hypnotized, and then he goes and hugs Mido with this big, beaming smile on his face. And the final shot is the camera on that smile turning into a pained grimace. And you're thinking, oh, fuck, did the hypnotism not work then? Has he just remembered that this is his daughter he's banging?
Oh, God. I need to disinfect myself right now.
Can we please pick this as a rewatch? Because it's one of those ones I really want to watch again. And do you know what? If when it comes to the point of doing it, I will watch the remake. Because I've told Ben I will. I have no intention because it will just ruin everything. But when it comes to the rewatch, I will because I need to do it.
This is it, because I've been saying to you ever since I saw it, I don't know, 2-3 years ago, whatever it was, that you need to watch the remake because it is so bad and it doesn't do it justice, me telling you that it's shite. You need to see it for yourself.
Oh no, does that mean I have to see it too?
But it's your boy Josh Brolin, isn't it?
Yes, and Samuel L. Jackson. It's got a great cast.
Yeah. What an awesome pick, Ben. Mm-hmm. A great one, which I think I probably knew you were going to have, if I'm honest.
Yeah.
But it's back to you, Mark, because I also picked Fight Club.
I hope I haven't gonna...
Oh no, is it going to be one of those ones?
I hope not. It's The Mist by Stephen King.
But
my lord. Ben hasn't seen this film, I don't think.
No, but I am aware of the twist.
Thank God, because I would have ruined a big one for you.
Cover your ears.
Directed by Frank Darabont.
Well done!
You have no idea how much I've been practicing. That has been said more times this week than Mrs. Doubtfire. I promise you, it has been...
Who's from Jamaica now? Yeah. I don't know what that was.
Apparently.
This film is adaptated from... There you go. How's that?
I've just spit brothers over my radiator. Adaptated.
It's an adaptation of the best horror writer of all time. Work on a fucking name all week and then say the completely different one word. Stephen King. And it's a great, great film, which hasn't got a massive budget, to be honest, but the performances are very, very strong. And the big twist about this is the families are avoiding this big cloud of mist. But the mist is like a monster. You see it coming into this supermarket where they're all hiding, and it's attacking people, killing people, and just basically being a threat to this whole town. It's horrendous because the CGI is actually quite good, and I think the monsters look pretty damn good. But not knowing what's in this mist is the huge fear factor for me. Just seeing this cloud, a bit like The Fog by John Carpenter.
Yeah. Mm.
What is it? What's in it? What is this thing behind it? But the film basically tells the story of their survival At the end, we see this family man. He's with his one child and his wife in the car. And we see that basically it's going to attack him. It's going to kill his whole family. You see the thought process in his head of, my family are going to be killed as well as me in the next few minutes, but I can make this easier for them if I blow their brains out. To know you've got to do that to your loved ones must be the hardest thing ever, but it's still better than going through this pain of what's about to happen.
Mm.
So he turns round, he kills his son, who's only about 5 or 6. He then kills his wife, and just before he puts the gun in his own mouth and blows his brains out, we hear this kind of siren sound. The next thing we know, he gets out the car, and there's the army. They've come to save the day. But what have they saved? Because his life's not a life that needs saving at this point, because it's all gone. He's just blown the brains out of the most important love and closest people to him. And what's he got to show for it, apart from blood on his hands?
Yeah.
It's absolutely horrendous. And talk about gut punches in stuff like Old Boy and bloody Fight Club. This one you would have never have seen coming again, because why would you do an ending like that?
Yeah.
It's just such a low blow. And it, again, it's one of the endings I think will stay with me forever. And Ben, I hope at some point you watch it, even though it's ruined, just to watch it and see it on the actual screen will have an impact still, even though you know what's coming, because it's done so well.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, if I'm right in saying this, it's different from the ending of the book, isn't it? But
yeah.
King really likes the film ending.
I think he might have said on record it's better.
Yeah.
I think he preferred it,
yeah.
Which is a hell of a compliment to old Frank Darabont. But
well
yeah,
done.
No, it is.
2 for 2. Can he make it a 3?
That add up to date to dayism that he did was very good.
Have you seen the film?
Oh, it's such
add
a good film.
To,
yeah.
But yeah, it's an absolute classic horror film, and I don't think they make many good horrors anymore. But when you know it's in the hands of someone like Frank Darabont, who's done the likes of Shawshank Redemption and Green Mile, which are absolute fantastic adaptations,
mm-hmm.
This one goes alongside those two in a great sort of complementary way to Stephen King's work, which sometimes can be done very badly on screen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, big time.
So credit to them all.
Yeah, this film made me very depressed at the end.
Imagine someone's going, oh, I love the ending. Yeah. It's great.
Oh, I watched the ending, then I made myself a cup of tea. Brilliant day. No, I had to go into a darkened room and listen to just my own thought process.
Yeah.
But it is a cracking film. It's great. You're right. It's a bit of a low budget, but the effects, they're
pretty damn good.
They're not bad. Isn't, what's his chops from American Pie? The Shermanator.
Yep.
He's in it too.
Yep.
And he just looks like he's been stretched like Stretch Armstrong because he's slightly older than when he did American Pie.
Having never seen American Pie, who the frig is the Shermanator?
He's someone you never care about.
He's a sex robot sent back from time. So, Ben, it's your go.
Mine is Bryan Singer's crime classic from 1995, The Usual Suspects.
Oh, Blimeneck, it's mine too. My topic, I get bugger all.
So, Verbal Kint, played by Kevin Spacey, is a meek, small-time crook with cerebral palsy who's the only survivor of a violent heist gone wrong. And he's telling the story of this disaster to a cop, as well as telling tales of the legendary and murderous mobster Kaiser Soze. And we never know who this mysterious Kaiser Soze is, but Kint leads us to believe that it was Dean Keaton who was the ringleader of the failed heist. The big twist comes at the end of the film, as we see Kint walk out of the police station with close-ups on his feet. And he has a limp because of his cerebral palsy. But the palsy-affected limp gradually fades into a purposeful strut. And then we see him walk into like a limousine. And it slowly dawns on the cop, just as the same time as it dawns on us, the viewer, that Kint was Soze the whole time. And the difference from this twist to others is other twists, they kind of make you go, oh, didn't see that coming. Oh, this is the kind of twist that made me stand up and applaud. I was like, that is so fucking audacious that deserves a round of applause. It's just a spectacular twist, especially when you see how the cop has started to put it together. This tall tale that Kint was telling, he uses all these really weird and specific details. And then you see the cop, Kujan, looking around his office, and like the bottom of his mug happens to have a word on it that Kint mm-hmm. used, or there's something on his message board that Kint referred to. And clearly Kint had concocted this whole story just based on shit he could see in front of him. And the realization on the cop's face at the same time as we're realizing it is just a masterpiece of storytelling, direction, and editing.
When we're introduced to Verbal Kint in the policeman's office, he's gradually just sort of scanning the room, just looking at the corner, the ceiling, the ground, the desk. You don't think anything of it. You just think he's a very nervous man about to confess this awful story that's happened.
Mm.
But little do you realise he's building the story from that particular moment onwards. It is astounding. I chose this because it's more about the story too. This is nothing to do with what's happened in recent events, but this story is still one of those ones where I always want to recommend this to people who really want to see a good bloody film. You know, nothing disposable or anything like that. This is a film that we are still talking about 20 years later. It's probably a film we'll still be talking about in 20 years' time. But the story alone, my God.
Yeah.
We did it as a rewatch, didn't we? Not too long ago. Yeah, yeah. About 10 episodes ago. And yeah. I really enjoyed it. And this was before the whole Kevin Spacey stuff came out. And it was one of those films I think I'd only seen once until then. Blows my tits off every single time. It really does.
Yeah.
It absolutely blows them a mile off. And do you know what? I don't care what's happened with the whole Spacey thing now. It hasn't tarnished this film for me.
No, not
should
it.
I can still watch it and I enjoy it for what it is. And his performance in it is an absolute masterclass of acting. And you can't take anything away from it. It should be a classic and it will remain a classic for me for the rest of my life.
It's art. Yep. And that's what we do. We separate art from what has happened.
Yeah, separate the art from the artist. One of my favourite things about this, and we might have mentioned this when we did the rewatch, is that Gabriel Byrne, who played Keaton, he truly believed he was Kaiser Soze. It wasn't until they had the first cast screening that it was revealed that it was Kint that he found out, and he was furious. Apparently he took Bryan Singer aside and had a right go at him.
Good.
Because he was just completely shocked by the twist.
I love hearing stuff like that.
If even the actors are shocked by the bloody twist, then you know it's working.
I'm sorry, Gem, you're not going to get to talk much. I think it was a couple of episodes ago I didn't get to talk much. It just happens sometimes. Yeah.
All right, chatty Cathy.
Is it my third and final
choice?
It is,
yeah.
I hope you haven't got it.
Oh, you have. I know you have now.
It's a horror.
Oh, bollocks.
Have you got it?
You don't know what it is yet?
I think it might be.
I think it might be too.
It's Saw.
Fucking
Do you know what?
Yeah,
this is
it.
How much I love you. You take the mic.
Are you sure?
Yeah, you are. There you go.
That's your wedding present.
That's it. Thanks. Don't expect anything else. we won't sack her for another couple of episodes now, right?
You will never get anything more from me.
Take the mic.
Thank you very much. So again, this is a film and the twist is at the very, very end. And when the credits rolled after the twist was revealed, I sat in disbelief in a dark cinema just going, what the fuck did I just see? Mm-hmm. It has never been seen in a horror film, nor has it been replicated, because there is no way this kind of twist can ever be done again. So we have two men trapped in a windowless bathroom that chained up, and they've got a dead body for a little bit of company. They don't know why they're there, but they've been given a time limit as to, you know, how long it takes for them to get out. Otherwise, they're going to die. So the story goes back and forth and we find out a little bit more about these people's lives and we find out about, you know, the doctor, one of them played by Cary Elwes, I think it is.
Yep.
He's helped out this old guy in a hospital, which is all very nice and it's all very righteous. However, the story goes on and we come to the conclusion. The time limit is ticking by. There's not a lot of time left. Cary Elwes' character, the doctor, decides they need to get out. So what is he going to do? There is a saw. There is a saw in the corner of the room. He crawls over. He's going to saw his leg off. That's my sound effects, by the way.
Nice.
It's not as good as Mark's, though.
No.
But anyway, he's sawn his leg off. He's bloody done it. So he's managed to get out, bleeding profusely. He, you know, that leg ain't going to grow back, let's face it.
No.
But then, out of
you can
nowhere,
water it for days, but it ain't growing back.
Nah. But out of nowhere, the dead body rises up and reveals himself to be the perpetrator of the whole game, quote unquote. He's done it. He's set it all up to try and teach them a lesson. And then he closes the door behind him saying, game over. And that guy, that poor little lad that's chained up still, just screams into the abyss. Credits roll, mind blown. What have I just seen?
Yeah.
Your impression then of Jigsaw was actually bloody
Thank
good.
You.
Do it again.
Game over.
That was terrible.
Game over. Okay, first time round, if you listen, that was bloody good. It was a great film, and the problem is they made about 8 of them since.
A real shame.
And I remember the marketing campaign, because if we didn't have stuff like real big, you know, Instagram or Twitter, it was just big black billboards with the hand, severed hand on the floor, and it just said Saw. And like, not like every fucking film that's out now where they say, the scariest film ever made. Yeah. People passed out. People were saying, this is one of the scariest films ever. And it was probably since Blair Witch that people actually went, yeah, it is actually horrific. Yeah. You need to go and check this out. It's so gruesome. And the problem is now we've got Saw 7, 8, Final Saw, the Final Saw chapter again.
Oh my God, that's terrible.
And it's made a mockery of it. And a lot of people have now done the whole gore to death. We've seen, what's the other one as well? Is it, oh,
oh what
It's set in Europe and they go into...
Oh, Hostel.
Hostel. Yeah. It's pretty much the same film, but just over in Europe.
And terrible.
And it's a shame because it was just a one-off film. I think it could have remained as kind of one of the classic horrors that in 20, 30 years, people will say, that was genius.
Yeah.
And now it's just the gore factor of people doing different activities to avoid themselves having a horrific, gory death.
Mm-hmm. It's all about the bloodlust.
Yeah.
How can we make the next film even more grotesque than the first film?
Yeah.
And it's a shame because it started with such great beginnings. I think I've only seen three of the Saw films, and the first one is brilliant, as is well established. I don't particularly care for horror films, but I love that, and the twist ending really got me. And then the subsequent ones that I saw were absolutely atrocious.
They are.
It was just diminishing returns.
Can you remember if you saw it in the cinema?
No, I don't believe I did, but I can't remember.
It was definitely one of those ones where, people are passing out.
No, they
people
weren't.
Are throwing up. No, why?
No, it's like, look, get back to your popcorn, Brenda, and shut the hell up.
Brenda. Poor old Brenda. She always gets a batter in that girl.
Stick,
she's the one that's constantly passing out.
Bloody
like,
Brenda.
Jeez.
Is it your final one, Ben?
It is, and I'm so glad that neither of you've got it, so I can keep it all to myself. It's Christopher Nolan's underappreciated masterpiece, The Prestige.
Yes! It's probably four for me. It's unbelievable.
So it's the story of two dueling magicians, played by Hugh Jackman and Christian Bale, competing over a trick called The Transported Man, where Bale's character Borden enters a wardrobe and magically reappears in another wardrobe at the other end of the stage. Now, Jackman's character, Angier, cannot understand how Borden performs the trick, so he seeks the help of legendary scientist Nikola Tesla to create a device for him that can transport humans to enable him to perform the trick. The main twist, though, is that Borden is in fact two people. He's twins, which is how they made the trick work. The secondary twist is that Angier's device doesn't actually transport humans. It replicates them. And the original gets dumped into a water tank and drowns. And it's one of the most fucked up twists I've ever seen, especially the bit near the end of the film where you see all the tanks of rotting clones of Hugh Jackman dying. It's fucked.
When you actually describe it, it seems even more fucked up than when I watched it on the actual TV screen, if I'm honest, dude. You had a really nice way of kind of painting a picture in my head that's worse. But I think Christopher Nolan is the best filmmaker in the world right now, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And as a director and as a writer with his brother, there's no one better in the industry. And people don't give this film enough credit because they look at the spectacular Dark Knight, they look at the visuals of Dunkirk. This film, as an original idea, is mind-blowing, and we get David Bowie.
Yay!
What else could you ask for in a film?
Bowie's magnificent as Tesla. It's not an original idea. It was based on a novel, so they were working from source material. But you're right, the film isn't as loved as it should be, because the problem that a lot of people have, including friends of mine who don't like this film, is that it only becomes a science fiction film right near the end, and they feel like they've kind of been tricked. It's the same sort of thing as people who don't like From Dusk Till Dawn, because they're like, how the fuck is this a vampire film all of a sudden? People are the same with this. It's like a thriller about two dueling magicians, and then all of a sudden it's sci-fi with transportation. But I dig that. I love freaky, weird sci-fi. I'm all for it.
Oh.
But a lot of people think they were kind of sold something that they didn't ask for.
No, I'm in the club with you, Ben. It's a great film.
Yeah, I'm in that club as well. We're the Losers Club.
Losers forever!
But yes, a great, great pick. Losers forever. I'm celebrating myself as a loser.
Ben is suddenly out of the club.
It's his club and we're not invited. Are we all done?
I think so.
Yeah.
Shall we hear what social media said?
Please.
Let's hear it.
Yeah? Okay, so I'm going to go to Twitter first. So, Oliver D. Smith at Oliver Atlantis said, the nature of the beast, a.k.a. Hatchet Man.
Not familiar.
Nope.
Neither am I, but the other two you will be. Second choice is The Village.
Shyamalan.
That's a piss poor twist.
And third is Shutter Island.
Yes, very good.
Mm. I did work that one out while watching it. I did.
Yeah.
Proof.
Not many. Proof, yeah. Film myself watching every film from now on.
Mark comes out with a billboard with loads of...
That's a great movie.
It is.
Yeah. DiCaprio.
It really is. Demarez at D_Emarez said, The Sixth Sense.
See, whenever I can't enjoy The Sixth Sense now, ever since an episode of It Was Always Sunny in Philadelphia. You know the character of Charlie in It's Always Sunny? He insists that the big twist at the end of The Sixth Sense is that the guy in the wig was Bruce Willis the whole time.
Amazing.
He also said, The Usual Suspects and The Crying Game.
Yes, The Crying Game.
I've not seen that.
She's got a dick.
Oh.
That's the twist.
There we go.
Ruined.
Lisa Smith at Knowing J. Lisa said Vertigo with Kim Novak.
Yeah.
Yep. The Machinist.
Yes. Yeah. Great film.
And I thought one of you guys was going to have this Memento.
Oh.
Yeah, it was close.
Mm.
He likes doing twists, old Nolan, doesn't he?
Does.
Oh. Old twisty nads, Nolan.
And the twist with Interstellar was that it was shit.
Yeah, you go in, this is going to be great. It isn't. Go home. I want a refund for that film, even though it's been many years.
You had your chance when you saw him at the BAFTAs.
Oh, should I say, oi, give me £6. Give me £6 now, you bastard.
Jules at Julie Beth Fenn said, old boy, agreed with Ben.
Yep.
Identity.
Oh, yeah.
I love Identity.
Yeah. That's like John Cusack.
What happens in that? I can't remember.
It's all in their head or something.
Yeah, you see like 5-6 characters in a hotel. Turns out it's one guy with loads of different personalities. Really good film. So if you guys want to check that out, never mind. And then agreed with you with The Mist.
Very nice.
Mm. Then we're going to go to Facebook. Andrew White said, old boy, wasn't sure what was worse, the revelation or the tongue.
Yep. Yep.
A Beautiful Mind. Even after the revelation, they convinced me Ed Harris was real for a second time.
Oh, Ed Harris.
Oh, Ed Harris.
He could be our uncle.
Uncle
Ed. Let's adopt him.
Yeah. Uncle Ed. And then The Wicker Man, but the original. Sadly, not The Beast.
Yeah.
That's a great classic film, to be fair.
It is.
Oh, it is indeed. David Musgrave said The Sixth Sense. Also said Unbreakable.
Yes, very much.
And The Usual Suspects.
Yep.
Then we've got Instagram. Guys, if you fancy commenting, we look at Instagram too. So we've got Inner Harry Way said Primal Fear.
Yeah.
One of the best ever.
Yeah, I've not seen that in years. I need to rewatch that.
Oh, aye. The Others, which I really dug.
Nicole Kidman.
It is indeed.
Good film.
And The Sixth Sense.
Sixth Sense was kind of one that I would bring, but because it's so obvious, I just felt I couldn't.
It's the most famous film twist, isn't it?
It is indeed. Then we've got Solaris_2Media said Seven, The Game, and Fallen.
Yep,
unbelievable choices.
Mm. And then one more, going back to Twitter. So I've got insert name at Shagwit82 said The Prestige.
Yeah!
Brilliant.
Saw.
Yep. Amazing.
And the biggest twist of them all, Ben loving it.
Yes! That was a twist.
Absolutely.
Took us by surprise, didn't it, lads? So yeah, keep them coming.
Whose topic choice is next?
That would be me. I want us to have a lovely bit of fun next time round. So we're going to do our top three spoofs or parodies.
Oh yes! My God, yes!
Helplessly hoping her harlequin hovers nearby, awaiting a word. Gasping at glimpses of gentle true spirit, he runs, wishing he could fly.
Our review this time is Annihilation, released theatrically in the US, but we've been able to watch it in the comfort of our own homes on Netflix here in the UK. The film follows a group of scientists, including Natalie Portman's Lena, as they go on an expedition to investigate a mysterious extraterrestrial zone known as the Shimmer, with the aim of uncovering its secrets and finding out what happened to Lena's husband Kane, played by Oscar Isaac. The film also stars Jennifer Jason Leigh, Tessa Thompson and Gina Rodriguez, and was written and directed by Alex Garland of Ex Machina fame. Sometimes you kind of get a vibe about a film, because I know you guys so well. When I see a film, sometimes I kind of know whether it's going to be for you or not for you. I kind of think that we're all going to dig this. That's my early wager, and I hope I'm right. Gemma, I'm going to throw it to you first. What do you think?
It's not a perfect film, but it's incredibly enjoyable.
Yeah.
I'm very sad we didn't get to see this on the big screen. I thought some of the special effects were amazing. I think one or two weren't. But I thoroughly enjoyed it, and it was a joy to watch a female-led sci-fi action film by a director that I'm very excited to see his future body of work. So I liked it.
Excellent. Mark?
The best sci-fi movie I've seen that's original since Ex Machina. The only closest thing to it is Blade Runner 2, but again, that's a sequel, and we knew that was going to be good. This had a lot riding on it. It was terrifying, it was dazzling, it was unbelievable. At times I felt it was like watching The Thing meets Predator meets Under the Skin.
Under the Skin, absolutely, the ending. Yeah.
For me, I think we'll look back at this in 10, 15 years' time as a sci-fi classic. I think for me right now, it's the greatest film I've seen in cinema at home. But it's the best new release film I've seen in probably 2 or 3 years.
Wow.
Unbelievable film.
Wow. Yeah, you said the same thing about Dunkirk and then it didn't make your top 5 list last year. So I'll take that with a pinch of salt.
Shit.
It is a super weird, beautifully made, very well-acted film. As I mentioned earlier when talking about The Prestige, I love weird-ass sci-fi. This reminded me of films like Sunshine and Moon. You know, just out there, trippy, weird sci-fi. And I thought it was fucking brilliant. And I've only seen it the once, but I will be watching it more than once on Netflix, guaranteed.
Mm-hmm.
One good thing that I'm really looking forward to on today's review is, and I don't mind saying it, I think it's a film that, Ben, you will get the most from because you love analysing stuff. You love going and reading theories and different people's opinions. And I'm so glad that I get to discuss it with you two today because I want you to explain more to me about some of the stuff. I won't lie, at times I was losing track of what was going on. Right. I was trying my hardest to kind of work out the ending and then I had to go and read what people were saying. So I can't wait for you to... You are the most intelligent friend of mine. I don't mind blowing you a little bit right now, but you are. So I'm looking forward to you actually helping me out here because I think this is something that someone like H.G. Wells would be now going,
yes.
This is incredible. Yeah. You're doing what I wanted to do in this world. So just let's start the ball rolling.
I mean, where do we begin?
Wow.
I want to talk about the look of the film, I think, first. So Gemma, you mentioned that some of the effects are great and some of the aren't so great. I thought the film just looked spectacular all the way through, especially when the group of women first go into the shimmer. The cinematography by a guy called Rob Hardy, and especially the lighting, I thought was amazing.
Yeah.
It was so eerie and otherworldly, and especially the sky. The sky had the look of oil on water.
Ah, yes, that's my notes here, oil on water. Yeah,
it was absolutely amazing. I thought that the whole film was just a visual feast for the eyes.
Yeah, the only problem I had with the special effects, I think it was like just two deers and it looked a little bit ropey. That was my only criticism, if I'm absolutely honest. But the iridescence, the colours mixing and melding with each other, you had your pinks, your greens, your blues.
Yeah.
And it really did take you to a whole other world, which is right here on Earth. That's the crazy thing. It's like a galaxy of... this DNA morphing weird shit happening.
Yeah.
And it really did blow me away. And it's one of those films that you think of it, what it would be on like 4K, the big screen.
I know.
I probably would have weeped.
I'm gutted we didn't get to see this on the big screen. Yeah.
I have seen that Edith Bowman was such a fan. She's been trying to get it out in London cinemas and some places like the Picture House have been doing it. So I'm hoping people like the Prince Charles and some more independent cinemas local to us do it because I'd pay 20 quid to go and see it right
ditto,
now.
Ditto.
Happily.
For me, it's an absolute visual treat. I won't argue with you, Gemma, but I didn't see anything wrong with any of it. I was watching it as a visual treat. I think it's a kind of textbook for cinematography. I know what you mean about the deers, a little bit.
That's my only critique, though.
But the sky and the way that the figures moved and everything about it was just flawless.
Yeah. Yeah. And that creature at the end, I think that's what you were referring to when you said it was like under the skin.
Yeah.
So that creature that comes out of the hole when they finally get to the lighthouse at the end of the film that mimics Natalie Portman's movements.
Yeah.
That the first thing I thought of was that Scarlett Johansson film Under the Skin.
I just want to watch it again.
Me too. And before it became that creature, it was this kind of weird nebulous kind of smoke monster. It reminded me of Lost. old Smokey from Lost.
Yeah.
It just had all these different touch points within it that reminded me of other things, but it was the opposite of Red Sparrow. Do you remember last week when I said that Red Sparrow reminded me of other better things and that just made me realise how shit Red Sparrow was? This is the opposite. This made me think of a load of things that I love that this film was doing as well, if not better, and it enriched the whole experience for me.
It leads me to my favourite special effects and my favourite creature that is going to be haunting my dreams for many, many nights. It's that skull bear. It looked terrifying when you first met it on screen, but what makes this and gives it an extra dimension of truly terrifying things to even listen to is the scream it does. It is not a primal roar. It's not animalistic. It's the cry of one of the women who is murdered by this beast. I'm sorry, I'm really like speechless at the moment, but as a fan of horror and as a fan of monster horror, I think this is one of the greatest creations of a monster in modern day film and cinema that I have ever seen. Bravo, Garland. Like, that really did take my breath away, how scary it was.
And that's why I wanted to use The Thing as an example. It's this creation of this monster that actually makes you terrified. The sound of it when it was in the room,
the
breathing,
you're
just like, it's body horror as well. Again, we finally get on the screen. I love this director. He's given us everything we want as a visual treat, but again, he's made me terrified. And watching a film on the TV, I know it loses the appeal of not watching it on like a massive cinema screen, but I was still watching it at night on my own in my lounge and I was creeped out. I was this is horrible.
And the benefit of watching it on Netflix is that scene when the big skull bear came in and made that awful scream. There's a bit where Gina Rodriguez's character, he gets into a bit of a barney with her and he rips her jaw off.
Yes!
And it's fucked up. And I had the ability to then rewind it and watch it again.
You can't do that in the cinema. See that again.
Exactly. So, Netflix has its benefits. So the creatures and the look of the film are great. I've kind of mentioned Gina Rodriguez there. So let's get on to some of the characters. I'm going to start with Gina Rodriguez. I thought she was absolutely brilliant. There's a scene in the film where, because they're in this shimmer and it's starting to fuck with their DNA and twist their melons, she has then snapped and she's kind of tied up all the other women. And it's one of the best little pieces of acting I've seen all year or in several years. It's only, I don't know, a 5-10 minute scene where she's shouting at them and, you know, really paranoid, and then she breaks down and starts crying. I'm not familiar with Gina Rodriguez's work. She's won a Golden Globe, I think, for a show called Jane the Virgin, which I've never seen.
No, she's not Jane, as in Jane.
She's Jane of Jane the Virgin fame, yeah.
There's a mind-blowing Whoa. Twist for you.
Have you seen that show then?
I've seen a few episodes. Oh, right. She's so, like, innocent, yeah, and that's like, her. Jesus Christ, she's mental in this.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, because that's the only thing I know of her from, to see her like this, I thought she was absolutely brilliant.
If we're doing the topic now of the next big things, she is one of them. And Tessa Thompson, who is one of my choices.
Ew.
This girl is going to go on bigger and better. She's got Marvel behind her and Disney, so you know they've got a lot of trust and faith in her. But in this, again, absolutely mesmerising. And she's up against the big heavyweights of Natalie Portman, who doesn't do shitty half-assed jobs apart from Star Wars.
Nah. My only issue, I agree with you entirely about Tessa, my only issue is she wasn't used enough. They didn't give her enough to do. Absolutely.
And that's the flaw I was talking about earlier.
Yeah.
I was a bit disappointed when she left our screens, because obviously you see the DNA start to take over her body physically, and she decides she's going to allow it to happen. So she walks off into the forest, but then we don't see her. What I would have liked to have seen is her physically becoming these sort of topiary kind of figures that you see within the distance. And I agree, I don't think she was used as much. I think she was a lot more restrained.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, after seeing her in Valkyrie and Thor Ragnarok, she was killing it, man. She was on the forefront, but I felt like she held back a lot.
Yeah, and I just don't think she had many lines. I think she had maybe 20 lines of dialogue through the whole thing, which is an absolute waste.
Yeah, that's my biggest flaw of the film.
I thought Jennifer Jason Leigh was fantastic. The thing about Jennifer Jason Leigh in this particular role is she underplays it so much. And it's amazing that she does so much by doing so little. She's such a versatile actress, and I thought she was brilliant as the leader of the expedition in this film.
What has she been in again recently?
Hateful Eight.
Hateful Eight, that's the one.
Which is where she overplayed. Yeah. She's massive and broad in
and
that film.
And it was too much.
Well, I disagree. I thought she's magnificent in
Hateful
Eight. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, I kind of got... I think it was because it was too long, that film. Like, any cut. Even Dad annoyed me in that because it was just too long. But you're right, less is more, and it works so bloody well. And I kind of want to, even though she's not a young girl that's going to have a massive career ahead, I still want to see it in these big, important roles because she can do it.
She's great. I love that scene where she's down in the hole in the lighthouse and Portman finds her, and then she gives this kind of soliloquy about what's going on, about how they're here to take us over, and then she just says, annihilation. And then she just kind of explodes into this light. Oh, it's fucking brilliant.
And when you just mentioned at the start about some of the best lighting you'd seen, that scene is the demo for it. If you're wanting to buy a decent 4K TV, watch that. Because the way it's filmed and that light just on her, it's compelling. Your viewing is just so focused on her. And like you said, she doesn't overact. She just does it in annihilation.
Yeah.
Oh, I've got tingles. This is good. I haven't felt like this for a long time when we're reviewing a film. Yeah. It's great.
It's the Renaissance. Jennifer Renaissance Lee. Oh. She's coming back, people.
She was in Twin Peaks as well.
Bloody
she was
hell
one of the assassins
was,
with
she?
Tim Roth.
Yeah, I would like to see more of her, and I think Garland used her in the right way. You know, there was this kind of sort of world weariness about her. She'd seen it all, you know, she's lived it all. But it was the anchor for the team, I believe. You know, of course, Portman is in the forefront, but without Jennifer Jason Leigh, that team would have fallen apart.
It would. And now you've mentioned Portman, let's talk about the star of the film. I thought she was solid, if unspectacular. There was kind of less for her to play with than I think some of the other women in the film, but what she did perfectly.
Yeah, she knew what she had to do, did it, bang.
She's the seasoned pro. At times, I remember this one scene where she's holding the gun and she's shooting it, but you don't see the gun, you just see her face shaking with it.
Yeah.
And I was just thinking to myself, she's effortless. Like, she just literally can do anything. And I know I joke about Star Wars, but everything else outside of Star Wars, you look at V for Vendetta, you look at Leon, every big film, Black Swan, she doesn't ever suck in any film. No, she never has a Norbit. She doesn't, though, does she? She doesn't.
You mean the Oscar-nominated movie Norbit?
Yeah.
But it's true. She just... It looks like she's not even trying. And, Ben, you're saying, like, you know, you thought she delivered really well, but she wasn't unbelievable.
Yeah.
For me, she just did everything effortlessly and staggering. And at times I was just like, I'm rooting for her. And even when she's lying in bed and you just see her face, she's just got there's something about her that always draws me in. I bloody love her as an actress. I think she's by far one of the best in the business.
Yeah, I would agree. And one of the things that I would have liked to have seen more of is, in the present day of the film, her husband has gone into the Shimmer, played by Oscar Isaac, and then he kind of comes back, or a version of him comes back. We see a couple of flashbacks to her earlier days with him, but not many. And there's one particular flashback where they're in bed together and they're kind of ribbing each other and then they start tickling each other. And their chemistry is electric. Mm-hmm. And it just makes me want to see those two star alongside each other in another film where they get to play off each other more than they did in this one. I thought they were beautiful together.
And remember, this is Oscar Isaac's second Alex Garland film.
It is, yeah.
I love that guy.
Is he going to be the lucky charm?
He was very nearly in my next big thing list, but I thought he's already done enough stuff already be kind of on his way.
Yeah, I enjoyed him as Kane. Yeah. I really enjoyed him. I liked his presence. The fact that it was pretty much two characters, but one character, which leads into the whole thing about the theory that I read about, was they were using the Kane and Abel story.
Ah, okay.
And so obviously Kane went into the Shimmer. He's come back as not Kane or non-Kane, but he's turned into physically the same guy, but inside he is a being. So it kind of represents the Abel character. Also, I've just thought about that one bit that really freaked me out.
Look,
oh my God.
How excited she is.
Yeah. You know, when they pick up the video and there's footage on it and you see Kane and the rest of the guys, that whole sequence when he's getting that guy going, it's okay, guy, look, whatever his name, what guy. It's all right.
Guy.
Look, just relax. He gets his pen. He gets the pen knife and just starts cutting it across the flesh of this guy's stomach.
Yeah.
Takes off it like it's a fridge, you know, like just the little door. And then you see his innards moving in fluidity and synergy. And it looks, you're supposed to be grossed out, but it's that effect of the shimmer.
Yeah, it's mesmerizing.
And it looks beautiful.
Yeah, it does.
The colours, it's amazing. I just want to watch it again.
I need to watch it again right now.
Just for balance, I want to bring in one thing that I didn't love. There is kind of a subplot with Natalie Portman's character that she was having an affair with one of her fellow doctors or biologists. What was the point of that? You see three scenes, I think, between them, and it added literally nothing to the proceedings. I don't know what the value was.
Should have added more time in a shimmer.
Yeah.
It was, every time you say shimmer, I think Schwim from that comedy Shrim.
Oh, Shrim from Tim and Eric's $1 billion movie.
So far away from this film ever, but I can't say shimmer right. But you're right. Fuck you. None of those scenes were needed, and all we kind of saw was slow grinding in bed with him, and I just thought, what's the point in this? It's nah.
Yeah.
We could have seen Tessa Thompson turn into a topiary.
Say that three times drunk.
Mark.
It was a great film, and the interesting thing is this is based on a novel by a writer called Jeff Vandermeer, and it's actually a trilogy of novels. I doubt that they're going to make the other two films. This film is pretty self-contained. It ends with kind of, oh, what's going to happen now, but it doesn't need a follow-up per se. But if they did, obviously if the studio wasn't willing to release it worldwide, the likelihood of them making another one is slim to none. That being said, if it ends up doing great business on Netflix, if it gets a lot of plays, maybe Netflix will pony up the dough to do the next two ones. You never know.
Fingers crossed. Yeah.
And then you might get more Tessa Thompson. She goes off into the woods and she comes back and has a massive half an hour part in the next film, and we're all happy. I've not read the book, so now I kind of don't know if I want to, knowing that they could release the film.
I've got the trilogy. I haven't read the first one, but I read the synopsis on Wikipedia, and it seems like Garland has taken massive liberties with the book. It's very different, I think.
Okay.
It's basically the same concept, but very different in execution.
One of the things that has blown my mind about this film is the reviews. So I've seen nothing saying, it's pretty good, 6 out of 10. It's been 1 out of 10, the worst, wackiest piece of shit film I've ever seen. No wonder it's gone to Netflix. And I've also seen people say 10 out of 10, absolute masterpiece, greatest film ever. No one is kind of sitting on the fence going, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
It's either it's the Marmite film of the year.
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah.
And nothing else I don't think will topple it, because nothing else will top it. Topple it.
No, you were right the first time.
Topple's fine. Topple's acceptable.
Good.
Don't beat yourself down. You did good.
I know. I'll let you two do that for the rest of the episode. But it's true. And I think that it's a strange one because it's such a hated film, and I don't think it's deserved of that.
You kind of have to be on the right wavelength with it. And that doesn't, just because we like it, it doesn't make us better than the people who don't.
It
definitely does. It's just about being on that particular wavelength and getting it, I think.
Yeah.
And we were in tune to it.
Oh, yeah. What about the end scene?
Oh, this is where I'm a bit not sure.
Me too. Yeah. Oh, I'm so glad you said that.
So go on. What is it you're not sure on?
She's changed. He's changed.
Yeah.
And now they're coming back together as different people. in my opinion, to kind of give that, because they're both up for giving the marriage another go and kind of giving it another go. Because their eyes are different and everything, it's not really them.
Yeah, so it's definitely not him. Yeah. It's the doppelganger. It's not the original Kane. The original Kane blew himself up with the bomb. Yeah.
Not
so
Kane.
So it's the doppelganger. But it is the original Lena. It's just she's slightly changed because she's been in the Shimmer and her DNA has changed.
Yeah.
So it is the original her, but changed somewhat, whereas it's a completely different him.
So
I think.
So are her eyes changed because of kind of like the alien DNA getting into her? Yes. That's all it is.
I believe so.
Yeah.
I might be intelligent for 5 minutes. But then someone will be tweeting us next week going, Ben, Mark, you're totally wrong. Could you be. Didn't do this. Yeah. And that's what I love.
Exactly. It's great, isn't it? And if we don't get a sequel, then that's the fun of it, isn't it? We get to debate that forever.
And have you been on the web reading lots of different theories at the moment and spotting scenes of glasses of water and stuff like this?
I haven't yet because I only watched it last night.
Right.
Oh, okay.
But, you know,
I know what your weekend's
then. Yeah, exactly.
I wish we kind of, and this is a bit of inside info, but us three always go to the cinema together and do our new release and we get there. And I just do wish we could have, because I do believe we would have, we never reveal what we think until we come to the episode. And that's why I think it works so well on this podcast. But I don't think we'd have even got to the car park without going, oh my God!
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It would have been like Force Awakens all over again, where we just couldn't keep it in.
Or Ghost in a Shell.
Where we couldn't keep
that
in either.
Furious.
Oh, yeah.
You could
feel the heat coming from me.
It was when Ben was spitting and punching a child at that point on the way out.
So we were just like,
he doesn't like this.
Yeah, it's like, do you think he's okay? Yeah.
In my defense, the kid was a prick. Shall we score it?
Yes. Okay. I'm tired, but in a good way.
Right, I'm going to go to Gemma first, because in the intro, you didn't love it quite as much as Mark and possibly me, so I'm going to start with you.
I'm going to give it a very fair, but a very high 8 out of 10. Mm-hmm. I stand by what I say. I think there's a few tweaks, but ultimately, this is a mind-blowing film, and please go and watch it if you've not already.
Marky Mark.
It's a very high 9. I can't give it a 10, but I believe in a few years' time, I can watch it back-to-back with Ex Machina. I think the two of them together will be brilliant. Yeah. Especially when they come out on Blu-ray or whatever they do. There's going to be a way of owning it as well.
Sure.
That will be a visual treat. And I think I will look back and think, I wish I gave it a 10, because I can't fault it. But at this moment in time, it's probably like a 9.9, which is huge for a new release.
Yeah.
And I've said it a couple of times, but at this moment in time, as we are, in March? It's my film of the year at the moment.
Wow.
Big words. For me, at the minute, it's an 8, purely because I've only seen it the once, and that was only last night, so it's still fresh in my mind. I am undoubtedly going to watch it again, and I can imagine it will creep up in my estimation. But for the time being, it's an 8. So overall, the skip to the end score for Annihilation is 8 out of 10.
It's competition time! If you'd listened to our last episode of Red Sparrow, you'd have heard we had about 6 different opportunities to win some kick-ass prizes. So let's start by revealing the winners of those amazing competitions. Kicking things off, we had a Pacific Rim bundle for the brand new release of the film, which I'm quite looking forward to be honest.
Me too.
It should be, is it Pacific Rim Uprising?
It is.
I'm very excited, to be fair. That'll be a skip trip.
Big time, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And what we said was to win a bundle which had t-shirts and phone holders and hats and hoodies and jumpers and everything you could imagine. Really simple. Who directed the original Pacific Rim? So Gemma?
Guillermo del Toro.
He did a bloody good job as well.
Your mate as well?
He is. And that goes to Frank Thomas, who got that right on email. Our good friends at Richer Sounds came along and offered some AKG Y50 BT Bluetooth headphones, so I reckon that's what the BT stands for. Bit of a mystery there, you know what I mean? And that's probably the best way to listen to our award-winning podcast.
Award-winning?
My mum said we're the best,
that's really good.
And what we said was, a bit of a technical one, to go in line with the Oscars was, who won the Best Sound Mixing Oscar for Dunkirk? Now, I wrote this down because I wouldn't expect us all to know.
Yeah.
It's Mark Weingarten,
amazing.
Gary Russo and Greg Lancaker, I think. Yeah. Something like that.
If they just said Dunkirk, that would have won the prize.
Yes. And Sarah Bishop on Facebook named all three
and
mentioned Dunkirk. So you'll get them. And I want to see a picture of you listening to our podcast with those superb wireless headphones. We've released a brand new Skip to the End, our only second ever official t-shirt. The first one sold like hotcakes with the Stranger Things logo, and now we've done it for Back to the Future with our good friends at Dark Bunny. So the way that you could win this t-shirt was all you had to do is tweet us or Facebook or Instagram us your reason why you deserve to win. And I think that takes a bit more than just retweeting or something else. And I really like this. So Raven Muse has Instagram and tweeted us saying that he's listened to every single episode of Skip to the End. He's completely caught up, and now he's furious that he has to wait every 2 weeks to now listen to a new episode. So dedication.
Yeah.
All
but,
right.
But Mark, why does he deserve a t-shirt just for that? He then finished.
Why, Mark?
Why, Mark?
Why? We want to know.
Because he used the hashtag, shouldn't have to.
Oh my God, yes.
And for that alone, you are going to get a t-shirt.
Shouldn't have to.
You know what I mean? And if you've already bought one, because you're that much of a fan that you've already bought one, give it to your mum or dad, because that will make them instantly cooler than they are at this moment in time.
Indeed. And as we always say, once you receive your t-shirt, please do take a picture of yourself in it.
Mm. Yeah. And on that note, if you haven't bought one, this is genuine. We aren't going to make any more. It's not one of those ploys to try and get you to buy one, then we'll release a second wave. We're going to print what's sold for the rest of March. So if you haven't got one, they're 12 quid.
Yeah.
That's it's like not, a coffee in some really expensive houses.
That's a large caramel macchiato in Starbucks.
Exactly. Ooh. Oh, that's Starbucks. I wouldn't mind free coffee from there. That'd be pretty good.
I'll take it.
Yeah, buy one and then tweet us your picture when they start coming, because I love seeing all our listeners when we had the Stranger Thing ones. Our good friends at Arrow Film gave us Zoology on Blu-ray, and they're going to be working with us a lot more in the future, offering loads of new films. And they said, who directed Zoology? And you probably wouldn't know this. It's Ivan Tavadowski. So,
I don't think you do either.
I'm sure that's correct.
Luckily, Liam Arnott did tweet the right answer, and we can just say it was Ivan. And you're going to get that in the post on Blu-ray, which I'm really looking forward for you to watch and hopefully let us know you loved it. Tomb Raider's now out in the cinema. I haven't seen it yet. I don't think I probably will, if I'm honest.
No.
Who is playing Lara Croft in the new adaptation of it?
Alicia Vikander.
I love her, by
Me
the way.
Me too. Gorgeous.
And Tom Marsh on email will be getting the prize pack, which consists of a puzzle USB drive, a hoodie, and a survival kit. I do want to know what's in that survival kit. Will it be like a knife or something if you're in the jungle and get attacked? Or
yeah, of course, a big old machete. Some...
Tin of beans.
Yeah, beans would be handy.
Firelights.
If you were going to have beans, what brand beans would you want?
I'm very partial to Heinz.
Do you know what annoys me? When I go to my mum and dad's house, they go to Aldi and they buy beans from there. And they like to. They're sensible with their parents, you know, with their money. They do get like that, don't they? When you get to an age, you're more responsible with your money.
Yeah.
Don't cut corners when it comes to Heinz ketchup or Heinz baked beans. Get Heinz, because the other stuff tastes shit.
And you agree. You can totally tell
And you can't imitate, like, some crisps, Aldi crisps, are pretty good. They taste like Walkers.
Yeah.
But not beans.
And fish fingers. Don't get the Aldi fish fingers, because the batter just falls off.
Exactly. No one likes...
Buttered fish fingers.
Horrible fish fingers. It's just not good.
No one likes sloppy batter on their fish.
No, never. But apart from that, Aldi's imitations are pretty damn good. And finally... Last Exit to Nowhere gave us a couple of brand new t-shirts. They gave us a Fog t-shirt, and the simple question was, who directed The Fog? So Gemma?
John Carpenter.
So Rachel, which is at the Bendy Slow.
What?
At the Bendy Show would make sense.
Yep.
Is going to be getting that on Twitter, and it's a bloody nice t-shirt.
It is.
And finally, Unbreakable, the really cool design. Who plays David Dunn in the film Unbreakable, Ben?
Bruce Willis.
Yep, he used to actually care back then and do good performances.
And I hope he will do in the sequel.
He will.
Fingers
I think
crossed.
Shyamalan will get a performance out of him worthwhile, unlike that piece of shit we watched at Benny's house.
First kill.
Is this the film you guys were telling me about?
Yeah, it's with amazing. Hayden Christensen.
Oh, man.
Shite.
And Craig Minnett, which is at Craig Minnett, will be getting that. And on that note, you two, you're beautiful. So let's give you some prizes.
Yeah, what we got?
I love the noise.
I know, it's so,
so first
fresh.
Of all, Last Exit have given you a t-shirt for...
Yeah!
The Lost Boys.
Oh,
that's very cool.
That is cool.
What does it say on the front?
Santa Carla, baby.
Santa Carla, California.
Yes. And Ben,
yeah.
Look at this beautiful, beautiful t-shirt.
I've got my Kill Bill Hattori Hanzo Okinawa t-shirt.
Oh,
love it. Thank you very much, guys.
Thanks,
and I've got this Fog t-shirt, which we just gave away. It's bloody nice. So thanks very much, Last Exit.
Cheers.
Those people that are listening right now are going to be saying, oi, I want some prizes. Don't worry. Don't worry.
They will. Oh, they will.
Do not worry.
Hands on hips.
Oi, I want some prizes.
Now.
So don't worry, we've got some more. Even though I said I wasn't keen on it, the Tomb Raider actual bundle was our most popular competition on Twitter that we've ever done, which is crazy. So I spoke to Warner Brothers and said, look, guys, is there something else we can do for the listeners out there? Because they bloody love this prize. What have they done? They've come up with even more prizes. So they're going to give us a Snake Cube wooden puzzle box, a leather-bound journal, a mobile phone holder, free hoodies, two ladies cargo jackets, a backpack, a phone wallet with a cloth, a survival kit, a USB drive, free t-shirts, and free lady tank t-shirts. That's shitloads of stuff.
It's a lot.
Should we just make it really easy and say, who is Lara Croft in the film of the new adaptation? That's how fair. Easy is that? And we're going to give two of those bundles away. That's Sweet. How great they are. We've got some new friends come on board. So we've got Sony, Penguin Books, Puffin, Rainbow Designs, Fidel, and Jumbo Games, who have all come together for a Peter Rabbit bundle. This bundle's insane. A keyring, a tote bag, a sticker set, some headbands, a floor puzzle, a puzzle box set, a talking rabbit, a sticker book, a drawing kit, an activity book. There's absolutely loads.
Holy
the
shit.
Bundle. The bundle is absolutely... I can't talk, it's that big. The bundle... that's what she said. The bundle is absolutely huge. And I want to say thanks to all those guys, because they've come up with huge bundle. Let's say, who voices Peter Rabbit in the new film? And I'll make it really easy for you. It's someone I hate.
Yeah, it's your best mate,
yeah,
isn't it?
I absolutely hate the guy. Also, our good friends Last Exit to Nowhere, try and get a bit of synergy for us and try and make it that when they give us a prize, it goes in conjunction with what we're doing.
Nice.
So they listen to our kind of masturbate that's coming up for the one and only Russell Crowe, and they've given us an LA Confidential t-shirt, which is awesome.
Read what it says, Mark.
I'm not going to try and say
go on.
Fleur de Lis.
Oh, nearly.
nearly. Fleur de Lis.
That's not too bad.
That's good. Yeah.
He just loved mocking me. And because of the twist, they said they think, in their opinion, that Shyamalan's one of the best. We've got this limited edition comic book art gallery t-shirt from Unbreakable, which
lovely.
Is
literally
awesome.
Limited edition.
Yeah.
Says.
What should we say? What do you want to say out there? Should we ask people to... What do you want to do?
So I think the question should be, do you want one?
Yeah. So just tweet us if you want one.
Do you want one?
Yeah, okay.
Hashtag do you want one?
So many yeses just coming through on Twitter. Like Daniel Bryan, just yes, yes. I love it.
Thing do the gifs.
We don't make it much easier, do we, really? Funko, our good friends, have come along. Now, there's not much that they can really do because Annihilation doesn't have any pops, if you think about it. And neither does The Descent, which is a shame because I'd love to see some of those bloody predator monster things as a Funko. But they have given us their most popular range right now, which is the Emperor's New Groove set. So they've said they just can't make enough of them. People in America go insane for it. It's Disney. People bloody love it. So Sully said, I'll make sure I put two sets aside for you guys. What we're going to do, we've got two sets. Now, what I want to do is give one away to anyone that leaves us an iTunes rating. And if you have done in the past, you qualify to go into the pot. But this makes it a bit more exciting. Tweet us or Facebook or Instagram us a screenshot of yourself listening to the podcast.
No,
I
like
love
that.
That's how easy it is to win. Yeah.
No nudes, please. No nudes.
No.
You'll win if you send nudes. No, because some of our listeners fly. And finally, Richard Sounds have come along with a JBL Bluetooth wireless speaker. Yes,
JBL he's from here. WWE.
And it's called a Flip 4 speaker, which is ideal for listening to Skip to the End.
Ah,
we've got
handy.
Some bloody big prizes, I think. We give too much away. I've said
much,
this a lot.
Always.
If you won this speaker, I want you to tweet us and tell us what the first thing you would listen to on this speaker.
Yeah, now, if your answer is not Skip to the End, then you won't win.
You don't
simple
qualify.
As that.
And we will read out on the next episode all of your replies and basically all of the winners to this. Wow, another five big prizes. It's getting ridiculous, to be fair.
Crazy.
It's too much. Ooh. I might just, after episode 100, no more comps.
Just stop it. Knock it on the head.
All you win is us free every other week coming in your ears. That's pretty damn good.
That's the greatest prize of all. Now time for Movie Masturbate, the section of the show where we pick a name out of the pot and we wax lyrical about our favourite performance from them. So on the last episode, we chose the hulking Aussie bloke, that is Russell Crowe. You don't really introduce Russell Crowe like, you're Russell Crowe.
Russell Crowe.
Russell Crowe, you bastards.
You got that.
I quite like that.
You flaming got that.
Yeah. So we picked him. So, I want to hear what your guys' favourite performance of one of his films that he's done. So, Ben, tell me now. Gosh.
So it's at this point that I want to reiterate that what we're picking here is our favourite performance, not his objective best performance.
No. Our faves.
Good. Because my personal favourite is the character of Jack Knife in The Man with the Iron Fists.
Ooh, what?
Have either of you seen this film?
No.
Has anyone?
What?
It's a fair point, Mark. You've not even heard of the film The Man with the Iron Fist?
No.
Oh, lordy. It is a delightful throwback kung fu B movie set in 19th century China, and it's written and directed and starring the RZA from the Wu-Tang Clan.
Oh my god, I need to see this!
My god, it's so daft and so much fun. And Crow plays this drug-addled and scarred British soldier called Jackknife, who is handy with the weapon that gives him his name. And you have never seen Russell Crowe having so much fun on film as this. He has a reputation for being a right grumpy bastard, but in this film he's having a blast because the stakes are low. He knows he's not in Oscar contention for this B-movie kung fu film. He's just having fun and he's hamming it up and he's chewing the scenery. He's brilliant. He's absolutely brilliant. It's such a fun, goofy film. It also co-stars Lucy Liu and Dave Bautista.
Oh. Yeah.
And Dave Bautista plays a character called Brass Body. So named because he can turn his body to brass.
Spoiler!
So, I was going to watch it. Sorry, man. Didn't mean to give that away. Yeah, and Gemma, you'll love this as well, because apparently when RZA was writing this film, the character of Jack Knife that Russell Crowe plays was based loosely on Old Dirty Bastard from the Wu-Tang Clan.
Oh, rest in peace.
But there's not a lot I can say. If you guys haven't seen it, you can't really contribute. Oh. Don't go in there expecting a masterpiece. It ain't one. It's a goofy, fun, silly B-movie. And RZA's not much of an actor. Casting himself as the lead was a bad choice. But it's well-directed, and Russell Crowe is fucking brilliant. And it's so funny, so laid-back, so happy. Just to reiterate, you've never seen him having so much fun.
I like less serious Russell Crowe because he's just having fun. And a lot of his roles have won awards and have been very, very big blockbusters.
Yeah.
Huge, in fact, with some of the biggest people in the industry. So when he did stuff like Romper Stomper and he did The Nice Guys recently and he was just having fun.
Yeah, Romper Stomper was not a fun film.
No. He was not a big... He wasn't a big star at that point. He was obviously getting into the industry, but... How old was this film, probably, roughly?
It was 2012, so 6 years, yeah.
It's fair play to him.
Yeah.
Because he didn't have to do stuff like that in his career now.
I really want you to go away and watch it.
I will.
If you've got kind of 90 minutes just to chill and watch a film and have a few beers, watch this, it's fun.
After I've watched the whole of The Wire,
I'll
watch this.
And the remake of Old Boy.
Yes. That's not happening.
Go on, Mark. What's yours?
Very similar to Ben's choice. It's the absolute masterpiece by Ridley Scott called Gladiator.
Amazing.
Very good.
Unbelievable film from the year 2000. Everyone has seen it. It's all about basically a Roman general who's betrayed by the emperor's son, who's very, very corrupt. And he then gets his way in revenge by becoming a gladiator and going off to Rome to fight for his family. One of the most watched films of my entire life. Me and my dad watched it growing up as a kid. One of my dad's favourite films of all time. So you're kind of always going to want to watch stuff that he loves. It's so captivating, so convincing. He made, and this is credit more to Ridley Scott, he made ancient Rome look absolutely unbelievable. The recreation of that whole place looked absolutely stunning, and that's all down to him. But his performance, he's so loved by his people. He carries that film on his shoulders the whole way through. He does. He's absolutely incredible. He's so determined to get revenge. He's so confident. And I absolutely love the film. I don't think it's cheesy. Yeah. I think it's an absolute masterpiece. I think it's one of Ridley Scott's best pieces of work.
Yeah.
He's done some shit, and obviously he's done Blade Runner, which is the greatest sci-fi film ever. But this is up there. People don't give Gladiator enough credit, and it is because of Ridley Scott. And it is, more importantly, about the performance of the man himself, who I forgot his name.
Russell Crowe.
And it is. And those two together are absolute money.
Yeah.
And remember, what's the baddie in this film? It's our boy
Joaquin
from her.
Joaquin
Phoenix is... At this point, he isn't in the kind of world that we now know him for stuff like Her, where we're like, oh my God, he's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
But he's a fucking awful character in this.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad that he gets fucked over. And again, it's all because of Russell Crowe. He's phenomenal. It is his film. When I think of Russell Crowe, I think of him in that armour, in Rome, with that blade going, I am Gladiator! Yeah. And it's amazing.
I always think of him saying, my name is Maximus Decimus Meridius, father to a murdered child, husband to a murdered wife.
These impressions by you two are getting better than me, honestly.
They started better than you, pal.
Are you not entertained? Yeah. What about that?
That's a little bit Alan Partridge.
Are you not entertained?
There we go. But Gladiator, an unbelievable film. I'll never, ever, ever get bored of watching it.
Did you know that there was battered around Hollywood for quite a while? They were going to do a sequel to Gladiator where it was him trying to battle his way out of hell.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
I want to see it. It sounds mental. I want to see it.
I want to see it, but I know what's going to happen. It'll go straight to DVD, and you know Nicolas Cage has signed that contract for it already. You know that's his role.
Yeah, not the Romans!
Just kicking women in the head.
I think though, because it currently the first one starred an Aussie, they'd want to get a different Aussie, so it'd be Jai Courtney.
Oh, no, thank you.
God damn.
Pass.
I just want to say as well, recently, and this is a bit off topic, but recently I watched Die Hard, the fifth one. Is it Die... What's it called?
A Good Day to Die Hard.
A Good Day to Die Hard. I just need to say this now and get it off my chest. I think it might be the worst film I've ever seen in my entire life. And we've watched some shit, but you were just talking about Jai Courtney. Mm, okay. I forgot how shit this film is. The way it's filmed, the way it's edited, Bruce Willis is giving the worst performance of his entire life, and I actually can't believe how bad it is, and they still let them use the Die Hard name on the poster.
I know.
It's the worst piece of shit. It was only on ITV the other day, and I just flicked over and thought, oh, I'll give it another go. Why the fuck? Whoever made that, what's his name? Is it? It's not McGee or whatever, I hope not.
He's, some twat. Some
he's literally idiot. Like changed his name. He's in witness protection.
He should be sacked. It's the worst piece of shit I've ever seen. I just needed to say that.
I agree with you. And the thing that pisses me off the most is because all the other Die Hard films, I think prior to that, had been R rated, like 15s or 18s, so you could swear. This particular one, I think, was a PG-13 or whatever. Oh. So the bit where he says yippee-ki-yay motherfucker, he says yippee-ki-yay mutt, and then like a helicopter goes by or something that drowns out the swear word. Do one.
Sorry to piss on our Gladiator and our what's the one you're called?
The Man with the Iron Fist. How could you have forgot that already?
I can't believe you've literally
never heard of it. But then again, you'd never heard of the concept of referring to someone as a chameleon the other day. So what
and
the
I've
fuck
heard
you
it
know?
Loads since as well. It's weird.
To be fair, he adapted that one too.
Come on then, Gemma.
Okay, so my one's a little bit more serious, but I absolutely love his performance in this film. So my choice is John Nash from A Beautiful Mind.
Brilliant.
It's absolutely gorgeous. And he plays the life of famed Nobel Prize winning mathematician John Nash from his college years, which is not very, very convincing 18-year-old.
Because he's about 40 at the time.
Yeah. Got a little bit of a belly on him. But he plays from college to working for secret organisations, which unfortunately starts to put his life in a bit of a tailspin. This is a wonderful film, but more importantly, his performance is what makes it because he portrays Nash in various different points of his life. So, of course, I've just laughed about him being this rather portly 18-year-old who's clearly had fags and booze for breakfast. But he portrays him as this sort of naive guy who is just starting to get used to, spoiler alert, his delusions, these people that are coming into his life. As he grows older, he's more aware of himself as a person, but still the delusions are there haunting him. So we see this reflected in the characters of Paul Bettany. We see him in the characters of Ed Harris, who is blinding in this film, by the way. But the realisation when he realises that none of this is real, it's a completely different character altogether. And I believe the way how he plays Nash is nothing short of haunting. Now, he was nominated for an Oscar for his performance, but unfortunately, this was the time of his life where he was starting to spout some rather passive-aggressive poetry, which hampered his chances of getting an Oscar greatly. So unfortunately, this is kind of a bit of a black spot in his career. But his breakdowns, when he's leaving his child in the batter because he believes one of the characters, Charles, is looking after him and he's just tending to something else, his wife finds the baby sort of nearly submerged in water and she's breaking down. She has no choice but to call the doctor to get him committed. And then Ed Harris pops up and says, you can't let her do this. You need to kill her. You need to kill her. And he's battling with this delusional character in front of him and himself saying, no, you can't hurt her. But he also knows that she can't call this doctor to get him committed. It's truly heartbreaking stuff. And when Russell Crowe really plays it, he plays it to such ferocity and emotion that you don't think it is associated with him, but he's a wonderful, wonderful actor in this film.
It's an absolutely brilliant performance in a great film. Was it Ron Howard, that one?
It is Ron Howard.
Yeah.
He's too hit and miss for me, Ron Howard. Yeah. Sometimes he releases utter shit and then he does something great.
Yeah. Hey, remember Solo's coming out this year?
Yeah.
I'm not sure about that. I've not seen A Beautiful Mind.
It
sounds bloody great.
It's on Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
That's Amazon. I want them to give me some memberships.
Free memberships
for Netflix. And Amazon Prime would be bloody good. I know we plug stuff, but if you are listening, it's worthwhile because you might get one of your things talked about.
And as we'll find out later on in the show, Amazon Prime are listening, and I'll prove it to you later.
Oh! On that note, have any of our social media come up with some great performances from Russell Crowe himself?
They most certainly have. First of all, I've got Peter Charbonneau on Twitter, at pcharbonneau21. He says, perhaps not his best ever performance, but I really enjoyed his interplay with Ryan Gosling in The Nice Guys. A fun movie, punchy dialogue, and it's his most enjoyable work in ages, in my opinion.
I've seen it once, I liked it, but I didn't love it.
Ditto.
I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. Oh. It didn't blow me away. I do want to watch it again, but he was very good in it, as was Gosling.
Yeah.
Ion Riley on Facebook has said, The Water Diviner, his performance in this film was mesmerising and the film so heart-wrenchingly moving.
I've not seen it, but...
We'll have to seek that one out. On Twitter, Gav Yule at Dodgy Monkey has said, amazing as Hando in Romper Stomper.
Amazing film.
Holy fucking Christ. I watched this film for the first time recently. That's a bleak, dark film.
Yeah, and he's an absolute nutter.
Yes, he is.
Tiny bit.
Thomas Holt on Facebook has said, Master and Commander, The Far Side of the World. He was fantastic in the movie as Captain Jack Aubrey, so charismatic, displaying excellence in confidence and leadership.
Nicely worded.
Yeah, I didn't like that film.
I have no desire to watch it,
I'm not that bothered.
No, I think Paul Bettany was in that one with him as well. Yeah, I could be wrong, but yeah.
Fair play.
Yeah.
Film buddies.
Not my cup of tea. Karina F. on Twitter, at Tartan_Queen, has said, too long in the tooth to cry at movies, but his performance in Gladiator still makes me cry.
Wow. Come round and watch it with me and my dad. We'll all have a nice afternoon cry together.
Aww.
You can come as well.
Thanks.
No. On Instagram... On Instagram, IB426 has said, his performance in Cinderella Man is brilliant. The scene where he walks round a room, hat in hand, trying to get money so he can put the heating back on for his family is really moving. This is the film where he plays a boxer, isn't it? I've not seen it.
I've never seen it, but it gets very good reviews.
It does.
With Renee Zellweger?
Is that right?
I think so.
Yeah. Sounds good.
Check that one out. On Facebook, Andrew White has said, Ben Wade in 310 to Yuma. Crowe's last great film and a great performance as the killer outlaw. The flip between ruthless killer to a man with a crisis of conscience is amazing. I agree.
God, that's
our listeners are great at summarising their reasons.
They really are.
I'm out of a job next week.
I liked it because he was in it.
Yeah.
310 to Yuma, though, is a hell of a film, man.
Brilliant, amazing. Brilliant. Yeah. It's hard to get a good Western nowadays. I know we've been spoilt with Hell or High Water, and we've been very spoilt with
True Grit.
Bone Tomahawk.
Still, there's not enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's a great one.
And it's one of my favourite genres. And Christian Bale's amazing in it. But Ben Foster steals that film.
I friggin' love Ben Foster.
He's your boy, isn't he, Ben?
Big time. Jeff at Twitter, at JeffJames73, said, I like Russell Crowe in The Quick and the Dead. The movie had a great cast and you can't beat a good Western, just like we said.
I bloody love Quick and the Dead.
Yeah.
If we run out of topics, I think we should do our next top three Westerns, because I love talking about it.
Yeah.
So that'll be a future topic, our top six.
Although if memory serves, when we did Westerns, Gemma prefaced it by saying, I don't really like Westerns.
Yeah.
So I don't think we want to drag out another three out of Gemma.
I'm open to expand my horizons.
Next topic. Once we sacked it'll be the first episode we do.
Brilliant.
Oh, nice. Great.
Perfect. Nailed it. On Twitter, Bianca B. Garner at The Film B said he was great in LA Confidential.
Definitely
a very bad cop who gets results. Plus, he packs a mean punch. I'm amazed that one of the three of us didn't have LA Confidential, to be honest.
I only thought one of us would.
Yeah, it's a great film.
And he's brilliant in it. And then finally on Facebook, Steve Kondrick has said, Virtuosity. I love Over the Top Crow. Have either of you seen Virtuosity?
No.
Holy fucking Christ. So about 2 or 3 years ago, I was flicking through the TV channels. It was something like 2 a.m, and I got to one of those random channels they have on Sky of shit movies. And I saw this film, Virtuosity, and it was just starting, and it comes up on the screen, Virtuosity, starring Russell Crowe and Denzel Washington. I'm thinking, fuck me, man. Is this some like hidden classic? Nope. Crowe plays a virtual reality serial killer who escapes into the real world, and then Denzel Washington has to hunt him down. It is so fucking stupid. And it's one of those films, a lot of films came out in the mid-90s about computers and the computer realm and, you know, the net and all that kind of stuff. And people, it was written by people who didn't understand computing, or the people who wrote Hackers. And the film The Net with Sandra Bullock, do you remember that one?
Oh, unfortunately.
It's an absolute fucking shit show. Honestly, the writers clearly have never used a computer or met a human.
No.
At any point. Yeah, Virtuosity.
It sounds a bit like Lawnmower Man.
Yeah.
It's that kind of thing. But Crowe is funny in it because he's hamming it up big time. So, yeah, it is worth a watch for Crowe, but it's an absolute abomination of a film.
It's my pick for the rewatch, so watch out.
I've got a stiffy.
Always.
And I want to masturbate. I do.
There we go. Two things combined.
So, Ben, can you give me a helping hand with my stiffy? And let us know who we're going to
match. I really wish
he'd rephrase.
You're engaged now. You're off the card. So it's Ben's hands only.
I don't
Braun Strowman's hands or Ben's
Get
hands?
Get these hands. Right, give me a drum roll, please. Next time around, we will be mass debating over the Enigma herself, Tilda Swinton.
Yes!
Whatever makes you tired, the resting always fails.
It's now time for the rewatch. On this episode, it's my choice, and I've gone with the horror classic, The Descent. And hey, Ben's never seen it.
Ooh.
The story is all about a caving expedition that goes horribly, horribly wrong. A group of girls meet together to kind of... to be there after one of their friends, Sarah, goes through an absolutely horrific emotional trauma. Her husband is killed by the worst way of death ever on an open road... by basically a pole going through his head and killing him instantly. So 1 year after this event, they get together and go on this underground adventure to kind of just be friends and help her and just show that life's worth living again. This doesn't go to plan because they come across a strange breed of predators. And the whole film then is about their survival as a group of friends. Will they make it? Will they get out alive? As I've said, we are going to spoil it, and I'm going to throw it straight to Ben because he's never seen it, and right now I'm on the edge of my seat thinking, is this going to be a film that makes him love horror and explore it more? Or is it going to be the one where he says, Mark, please don't bring shit like this again to the fucking podcast? So Ben, it's over to you, sir.
I don't want to piss on your strawberries, but it's not my cup of tea. I didn't like it at all. It starts with a bang. The section you've just mentioned there where the husband and the kid die by getting speared through the skull. I was like, yeah, that's cool, man. I'm down. I'm loving it. And then fuck all happens for 45 minutes. It's just some women dicking about in a hole. I was like, what is this he's made me watch? I thought it might be a scam. I thought you'd been pretending to love it all these years just to wind me up because it was really, really boring. And then some Nosferatu-looking motherfuckers turn up for a bit and then there's a shit ending.
Do you like it?
How do you really feel?
Not for me.
At all?
No. Well made, in parts, but yeah.
Not your thing?
No, not at all.
You're not going to be exploring the sequel anytime soon?
Definitely not.
So on the other side of the coin, Gemma, what's your thoughts on The Descent?
Ditto on Ben. No, I'm only joking. I'm joking. No, anytime anyone mentions a recommendation for a good British horror, this always comes up on the list. I never tire of this film when I rewatch it. It's a cracking female-led horror film that shows women want to fight. They're not relying on men. They're not relying on sort of crutches. They are going to kick ass, and kick ass they do. It's a claustrophobic, nightmarish event that happens. And the ending, I know Ben thinks it's crap, but oh, it's a great kick.
I'm sorry, Ben, but it's one of my favourite horrors of all time.
I know.
Horror is one of my favourite genres. And that's what's good. We're not going to be on the same page. So yeah. I love... And again, everyone's opinion is respected. And I do love the fact that we're not going to be agreeing. I think the way it makes me feel so claustrophobic and so kind of in danger, it's horrible. I'm sitting there. And I know what you're saying, Ben. And I will agree on the one bit there you say. The opening scene where you're seeing him going along the road and she says, are you okay? And he turns round and it's that first person's perspective of you, this car coming towards you.
Yeah.
Some of the best directing you'll see is a setting up an incident. You think, fuck. We see the actual metal thing go straight through his head. And you're probably thinking, this is going to be incredible.
Yeah, I was.
And I won't take that away that the next sort of 15 minutes, 20 minutes is boring.
45 minutes.
Okay.
It's 45 minutes of them dicking him out in a hole until the Nosferatu looking fuckers turn up.
I like
What's
to
that
refer
about?
To...
I don't want to watch women spelunking for 45 minutes. That's not interesting to me.
Only on RedTube.
Spelunking.
Why are you saying it like that, Gemma? That's what it's called. Cave diving. It's called spelunking. That's the
it
actual name.
Weird.
It's the name.
It's the emphasis on the P and the L.
So they 45 minutes, that's long.
It
and
is.
It is setting up this whole thing of them going down and kind of being friends and, oh, you'll be okay. And then when they're trapped, you think that's awful. Because let's be honest, if us three went caving and we got trapped, it would be pretty hardcore. We wouldn't have Wi-Fi. We wouldn't have ways of entertaining ourselves. But not only that, you're then... I look at them as like Gollum off Lord of the Rings. They're really horrible creatures. And it's very original kind of design.
No, it isn't. They look exactly like Gollum and Nosferatu, as we both just said. So how is that original?
They still look different.
No, they don't.
Covered in sperm.
They're incredibly
derivative.
They've got
this derivative. Horrible...
You're listening to Skip to the End.
And they freak me out. The way they've kind of got no eyes, and they do look like they've been covered in sperm. They've got this dripping white fluid on them that's gross.
I think they're about as scary as a Furby.
A Furby! But the noise, the... that is eerie. And the way they move are like... it's horrible. They don't look like humans. They're so skinny and... ugh, they look creepy. And the way they move and their eyes, you only see them down the caves that are just slightly there. And knowing that they're present and you're trapped with them is the biggest fear for me. I do believe that if we went caving or splunking or whatever you call it.
Splunking.
We would come across these creatures. I do believe that they do exist. And it's more scary than The Exorcist or some other bullshit. I believe there are creatures that could eat my face like these guys.
Those crawlers, they kind of, they're almost a bit vampiric and a bit inbred.
Yes.
In a way, because there's no way they would have, you know, gone up from their splunking adventures.
I've learned something new today. Yeah. Splunking.
Spelunking.
Yes.
Not splunking. Spelunking. Spelunking.
You have to say spelunking.
Spelunking. And it's clear they've probably bred with each other in order to keep their bloodline alive. So
yeah.
It's clear they've not, like, nipped out to Co-op and grabbed a pint of milk or something. But it almost feels like they're very... obviously relying on their sense of hearing, but there's no control for their well-being either. They're really raw. They're really animalistic. They're no holds barred. And they don't, if they get hurt, they probably get hurt, but there's just no disregard for any other life at all. They are terrifying. I'm completely with you.
I think they're a genuine threat. Those girls must be thinking, we can't defeat these creature things because there's carcasses and bodies and bones all around. It's not like, oh, we're the first people to discover them. People have gone down there and been eaten alive for many years. So seeing these creatures, and when they do kind of get in a battle, they never really come up as heroic, the humans. They're always getting beaten or eaten alive. So all their friends are dying around her. You're seeing them basically having their flesh ripped off their face. Yeah. And it must be as Sarah, who's already gone through quite a lot of trauma in her life. You think to yourself... give this girl a break, man. Like, you know what I mean?
She is suffering
to her core. Corey Feldman core. And she's angelic
she's
to the
angelic
core.
She's angelic to the core, that one.
What did you think then about the actual human interaction? So her and her friend and obviously the group of girls. Did you like the fact that there was this kind of backstory and that, that you didn't like it? What about the heel turn when the friend kills the
Gina.
Other friend?
The kind of gift and the curse with this particular group of women is I'd never seen them in anything before or since. So that helps to suspend your disbelief. If you're watching a film like this and you see Natalie Portman or Scarlett Johansson, you're always remembering that they're a movie star and it's hard to accept them as the character. Because I'd never seen these women before, I immediately accepted them as the characters. The problem of that, the curse of it all, is that they weren't very good actors, which is probably why I've not seen them before or since. So I just didn't believe any of it. I didn't believe any of their trauma. I didn't believe any of their interactions. I didn't for a second believe that these were people, were old friends at all. I thought it was weak sauce. I'll tell you, just we'll come back to the acting, I'm sure, in a minute. But the sign that I knew this was going to be weak sauce was the opening, you know, when it shows the logo of the film, the name of the film, it looked like it had been done on PowerPoint. Honestly, you know what I mean when it comes up the descent and there's a little kind of little shimmer, a little glow on it. It's like that's a PowerPoint job if I've ever seen one.
It's a very low budget film.
You're telling me, mate. It's cheap as chips, this.
Do you not have much respect for Neil Marsh and the fact that he made it on such a low budget?
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. I think he's done a great job. And one of the things I think is brilliant is when they're down in the caves, I think the colour, the use of reds and oranges, the way it's lit and so on, is very well done. And for what I assume was done on, what, Two Bob and a Conker, I think he has done a good job. But it's not good.
You just said then, and I'm so glad you already have touched upon it, is the lighting. And we've just mentioned on a completely different level with high budget of Annihilation and how well it looked. Mm-hmm. But I think for the budget and the use of cameras he had, and remember it's probably like 15 years old or something now, the way he lights some of those scenes when they're coming down on the cords, the long shots, I think the lighting as well, when she's walking around and it's just her, and that it reminded me of, is it Buried, that film where the, what's his name from Deadpool?
Is it
Buried?
That's a remake, yeah.
Yeah, he's underground. It made me feel claustrophobic. Yeah, right. Watching them go through these caves with just that little light, I think was astonishing.
And claustrophobia was really good, yeah.
I thought the lighting that he uses in that is textbook. I think you won't find many films that are lit as well as that. I really do. And you've got to give him praise for that.
I do.
Have you seen Dog Soldiers?
No.
You're not going to check it out. I can't try. I would love Mel for him to explore more work by Neil Marshall.
Dog Soldiers, dog shit.
I really enjoyed the scene when Sarah got stuck.
Yes.
So the relationship between Sarah and Juno, obviously we find out, plot twist, that Juno was boffing Sarah's husband all along.
Boffing.
But that whole scene when she starts panicking, and I got a real sense of genuine fear for that. I could imagine myself getting into that situation. I'd probably get stuck in a bathtub, let alone a hole, but still, it got me on edge, that whole scene. And that, again, you mentioned about the lighting and the way how that was shot, I thought was beautiful. Really, yeah. Really great. And it really captured that sense of no control. And that's essentially what this film is. There is no control of saving themselves, getting away from these, like, you know, really terrifying little bastards and trying to survive. I really do call out that scene of being wonderful. And also Juno's heel turn. I loved her heel turn.
I can't believe she kind of thought that she would get away with it. It's just ridiculous.
If it wasn't for those pesky kids.
Yeah, it's...
I really liked it. No,
is it the acting that let you down?
Yeah,
is
she's not a good actress. No. And also, you know, it's not as if she killed that other lass on purpose. It was an accident. And I know then she just left her to die. But if she actively turned around and stabbed her in the throat, then that's a heel turn. But it was an accident, so I just didn't care.
I do like that. She didn't expect for the other one to be there. And it was just that moment where they both froze and both looking at each other going, what's just happened?
And it's too late because the bloody dagger thing's in her throat. The blood's all dripping down.
That ain't going to be fixed with a Band-Aid, Mark, no.
Another thing with the direction that I wasn't particularly enamoured with, and I suppose you say it's a fault of direction and editing, any of the fight scenes between the Nosferatu golem spunk creatures and any of the women...
Splunking creatures, am I right?
Yeah. Spunk.
That's what Mark said. Yes. This is like they're called in spunk, so I'll go with it.
Yes.
But any of their fight scenes were so choppily edited. It was just cut, that you couldn't see what was happening. You couldn't really follow the action. I like a director that has the confidence to just let it play out in a still shot. We'll see the fight, and then you rely on the choreography. But he's relied on the editing, and it's too choppy.
I suppose
it's confusing.
It was of that time because you had things like 28 Days Later, and you also had another horror that I can't really think of right now, but never mind. It was of that time. I think the whole didn't really have any Nosferatu motherfuckers, did it?
Spunk monsters now, they're going to be called.
But I think it was of that time. I think 28 Days Later really opened the door for modern day British horror films. And I think probably what happened is he'd saw that because there was a lot of fragmentation during those attack scenes with the zombies. I think he might have been influenced by that and therefore incorporated it into The Descent. That's the only thing I can think of as to why it was so jagged.
Can we talk about the ending?
Yes.
Can we skip to the end?
Of course.
Yes. Skip to the
you
end.
You wanted to skip to the end about 8 minutes
I did.
Ago.
The ending pissed me off royally. So just to let people know, if you've not seen it, spoiler alert. So the main woman, Sarah, she's the last one left alive, isn't she, in the cave? All the other women have died gruesomely. She then sort of falls down a hole or some shit, wakes up, and all of a sudden she sees a shard of light. She climbs up through all these bones. She escapes. She gets out into the real world. She gets into her Range Rover, drives off, and then she sees one of the dead women next to her and screams. It's like, oh my God, what's going on? And then all of a sudden she wakes up again and she's back in the cave, and that didn't actually happen. That infuriated me. The whole, it was all a dream. It was a fantasy thing. That whole gambit winds me up in every single film because it's a cop-out. It's a cheat, the whole it was a dream thing. It's one of those tropes that no one should ever, ever do ever again. Because it's fucking lazy.
Even in La La Land.
Especially in La La Land.
Even in, what's the soap that's very famous for the
Dallas.
Dallas.
When Bobby woke up, when Bobby was in the shower after being dead for a year.
Has it been long enough for you to forgive them for that yet?
Yeah, I still really love Dallas. But I just can't stand that it was a dream or it was a fantasy thing. It's so lazy. It's such a crutch for a writer.
So the difference with the US cut was that they... When we see the friend in the car who just, she screams, it just kind of cuts there.
It ends there, so you don't know that it was a dream. I think the American cut is better.
Yeah.
I get why people like the British cut. The British cut, she then wakes up, she's actually still in the cave. It's really bleak. It's like, oh, she's actually fucked. She hasn't escaped, she's fucked. And I love a good bleak ending. So I dig it in that respect, but I just hate the concept of it was a dream or it was a fantasy. So the American version, where she really did escape, but then her dead person is next to her, I like that because we know that Sarah's already had a mental breakdown, so she could really be envisioning this woman next to her even though she's dead. I think the American version works better.
And it leaves it nice and open.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts? Do you like the end in the UK or American?
Well, I quite like the UK, but I also quite like the American because it's two different ways. And you have to remember, with horror films are synonymous with the final girl. The final girl always escapes. The final girl will always be mentally scarred by what's happened. And it's always about that lone female survivor's ordeal and she's made it, she's there. But that wasn't the case in this moment. And I think that's why I respect the British ending so much, because it wasn't the Friday the 13th ending where she does dream and, you know, she's okay, she's in a hospital.
Yeah.
The whole thing that I got from the UK ending was that she's dead. This is the afterlife. She's been presented with a birthday cake by a dead daughter. She never made it. And that's what I took away from it. Hence why I like the UK ending.
Yeah.
But I also, on the other side, I like the US ending because you then decide, well, yeah, Is it delusions? Is it her dead friend actually there?
It's the ambiguity. That's why I prefer the American one.
Bloody love an ambiguous ending.
Yeah,
I'm not going to try and say that word, but I like the UK ending for the fact that I just like the fact that she dies, and you know it's not a happy ending. Yeah. And I think what's important is all that fight, all that even turning on her friend and saying, "Do you know what, Juno? I'm going to kill you. You're not going to be forgiven for what you've done, even though we're down here and no one else would know in the bigger world. I'm going to be the one and the better person and kill you so everything's right in the world." It's all a waste of time.
It was never worth
it. Because you're going to die anyway. Mm-hmm. It's by the monster now or in the monster in 20 minutes or 2 hours.
Yeah.
They're going to eat you. They're hungry. They need more spunk on them. They just need to basically eat you alive. Your life's been tough anyway. And a bloody bleak, like Ben said, hardcore ending.
Yeah.
It wasn't Hollywood ending. She didn't get out and then, oh, actually, my husband's fine. It was, you're fucked anyway.
Yeah.
And that's harsh.
See, that's what I expected the US ending to be. So she drives off in the Range Rover and then gets to a police station and everything's happy and she's fine. But it's not. The US ending is still fucking trippy because you don't know if she's really seeing this ghost or whatever. So I just think it works better. I just want to go back to something Gemma was saying there about the concept of the final girl in the horror film. And it is a massive trope. One of the things I love about this film is the fact that it is female-centric and all these women are strong, kick-ass women in their own right. Often women in horror films are just fodder.
Yeah.
They're damsels in distress, fodder for a serial killer to slash them.
Mm-hmm.
I like that they had some agency of their own, and they all end up dying, but at least they die by putting up a fight.
Exactly.
They're not just scantily clad women getting their throats slit. So I do applaud that.
And there's so many horror films that have gone by that design in the past, and it is so refreshing to see that these women, you're right.
They don't even get saved by their big American footballing
because
boyfriend.
What's the effing point?
Yeah.
They were doing things that I know probably the majority of blokes I know wouldn't even know how to sort of abseil down into a cave and have the balls to actually go and explore this uncharted territory because it's revealed that it's not a well-known cave. This is a cave that's never been, allegedly never been explored. And they fucking did it.
And it didn't really work.
No.
So the moral of the story is,
don't
take any adventures in life.
Stay
grounded and just stick to what you know.
Never leave your house.
Stay doors, put the kettle on.
If you go off the track in life, you're going to get eaten by something covered in spunk.
Just order a pizza.
It's the story of my life. But like, genuinely, though, I don't understand why people go spelunking. I understand. It's a real word, Gemma. Stop laughing. I don't understand why they do it. I understand why people climb mountains. I would never do it in a million years. But you have the achievement of doing it, and then you get a nice view.
Yeah.
I understand why people do things like base jumping, because the adrenaline rush. Why the fuck would you go jumping into a hole? What's in it for you?
I know.
You don't
why would they do it?
You don't get like a sort of a keychain with your photo on it.
No.
I am not interested.
On a bit of an off point, I'm well up for going to Alton Towers with you two to go on the new Wicker Man ride.
So want
to
go on
I'm
that.
Well up for that. Even though we might die and get our legs chopped off, I am well up for going because it's a new ride, so safety's going to be quite good at the moment.
We think.
And it's a good skip trip. Everybody loves Alton Towers, and I'd love us for you to go. So if you're listening, free tickets, and we'll review the ride, Wicker Man.
And we won't mention the leg chopping incident again, we promise.
No, not at all. So on that note, I think we've said all we can about The Descent.
Yeah.
And I think we should score it. Thank you, Gemma, for helping me
You're more than welcome. I got your back.
Ben, first, dude, and give it the look.
I know I've kind of said it's a bad film and it's shit. That's obviously not true, because you guys love it, and it was very, very well received by critics. It's a very highly rated film, so people who like horror clearly love it. It's obviously not a bad film. It's me. I just don't like horror films. It's my fault. I don't know if it's a failure of imagination on my part. I don't know if it's I'm not emotionally capable of dealing with films of this nature. I don't know. I just don't like them. They do absolutely nothing for me. So the best I can do is give it a 5.
I think that's fair.
I do. So Gemma?
I'm going to stick with you, buddy. I think it's a really great film. Really great female-led film. I really enjoy it, and it's always a joy to watch this again. So I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10.
I love it. I think Neil Marshall, for that, and Dog Soldiers, even though you won't invest, I don't expect you to, unless we pick it as a rewatch. That's the only way I can get you to watch it. He does something for British horror that many other directors have tried and failed at, and I think he's a genius. So for this, it's a high 8. So I think it's fair to say that overall, The Descent gets a skip to the end, 7 out of 10, which I'm happy with.
All right. Yeah.
We didn't let him make it too low.
No.
Whose rewatch choice is it next?
It's mine. I like that we watched a British film, so I'm going to stick to these shores. It's not Brexit cast, don't worry, but I'm going to stick with a British film, and I'm going to choose a film with a director that we have enjoyed his work. Somebody enjoyed his work very much a few years ago as one of their favourite films of that year. And I've only just been on a little UK trip myself, and I thought it was very apt.
I know what it's going to be.
For our next rewatch to be Sightseers.
Yes!
Amazing.
So it's time for the final round of John Trivialta, our trivia-based quiz. And the way this game works is I've got 5 movies, and for each of those 5 movies, I have 3 clues, 3 bits of trivia that I've taken from the IMDb website. I am going to announce the first clue, which will be worth 3 points. The first one of Gemma and Mark to shout out their name gets to have a guess at it. If they get it right, they get 3 points. If they get it wrong, they're locked out. And the next clue, worth 2 points, goes to the next person. If it goes to the third clue, it's worth 1 point. Does that make sense to everyone?
Yeah. Yep.
Now, of course, I've already won the quiz because I won the first 2 rounds, just saying.
Yeah.
So we're really playing for the wooden spoon at this point, aren't we, chaps?
This is the real quiz
this
I want to say.
This is it. Yeah.
Can we just have, like, bragging rights? Because me and Gemma like to have little sort of beef with each other.
Yeah.
And it's something
I just want to be your friend.
Okay. I love you.
Aww.
Says the man who couldn't be asked coming to your wedding.
Yeah.
Not bothered.
I handed her the mic today and gave her a bit of spotlight.
Well done.
And, you know.
Thanks.
Are we ready to play the game?
Yes,
let's
please.
Let's do it.
Okay. So, your first piece of trivia. Whenever oranges appear on screen...
Gemma.
Oh, fucking hell. Go on, Gemma.
It's Godfather.
It is the Godfather!
Yay!
3 points to Pooch.
Good start. I'll give her that.
So that is 3 points to Jemmy. So yes, the full clue would have been, whenever oranges appear in the film, they foreshadow death.
Yeah.
And that is true. The other 2 clues, number 2 for 2 points, would have been Al Pacino boycotted the Academy Awards ceremony, angry that he was nominated for the Best Actor in a Supporting Role, even though he had the most screen time of any actor.
Ego.
And the third and final clue was, animal rights activist protested at the horse's head scene, leading the director to say, when the head arrived, it upset many crew members who are animal lovers who like little doggies. What they don't know is that we got the head from a pet food manufacturer who slaughtered 200 horses a day just to feed those little doggies.
Oh, so how much do you love those dogs?
So you got a lot of work to do here, Mark.
I'm confident.
Pooch has got a commanding lead.
That's a great start. I'll give you that.
Thank you. I'm so sorry. I kind of just nicked it in there.
It's good. Well done.
To be fair, Pooch, you need this because you shit the bed in your first round.
Didn't I just?
Are you ready for your first clue from the next film?
Yes.
This is one of the few films that film critic Roger Ebert gave 0 stars.
Mark,
do you want to punt on that or what?
He did some weird stuff, didn't he? Like some absolute classics.
Yeah.
He was brutal
about.
That's
true, yeah. He hates The Usual Suspects. Or hated,
what?
He's dead now.
Shame.
He's dead.
He's not dead.
He is.
But he is. No, it'd be suicide at this point.
Let's go for the next one, shall we?
The Blue Oyster Bar used in this movie is actually called the Silver Dollar Room, located in Spadina Avenue in Toronto.
Mark.
Go on.
Police Academy?
It is!
Yes!
Yes! 2 points for Mark, well done.
I know that too well.
Little too well.
What a great film, though.
Unbelievable. The third and final clue would have been, when attending his audition, Steve Guttenberg won an old police shirt belonging to his father, Stanley, who was a New York City police officer.
One of my favourite actors growing up. Honestly, I love the guy,
oh,
Steve.
Oh, the Goot was amazing.
Yeah. He still is, dude.
Yeah. Are we ready for the third film?
Come on.
Clue number one. While the film was released in the summer of 1988, it's since evolved into a cult Christmas movie.
Mark.
You can't do Mark. Go on then. 3, 2.
Gremlins.
Incorrect. You're Pooch, clue number two goes to you, and Mark is locked out of proceedings.
All right.
For 2 points. Only a couple of the actors who played the German terrorists were actually German. The actors were cast for their menacing appearances rather than their nationality.
Is it Die Hard?
It absolutely is. Yeah! Die Hard. Well done, Gemma.
Thank you.
I thought we'd have something with Corey in it. Come on, dude.
The third and final clue, which would have been for 1 point, is the Nakatomi Tower is actually the headquarters of 20th Century Fox.
There we go.
Mark, you idiot.
Mark, you idiot.
You're doing all right, though, pal. Gemma's on 5, you're on 2, yep. So you can pull this back for show. Next one for 3 points. It's said that the Oscars changed from 5 Best Picture nominations to 10 because 2 of the best reviewed films of this particular year, this one and WALL-E, were not among the 5 nominees.
Oh.
So what film, along with WALL-E, do people think is the reason why the Oscars turned to 10 Best Picture nominations rather than 5?
I'm trying to remember what year that was. Mark, do you know what year that was?
I'm not going to help you.
Come on.
I have no idea.
Oh, Betty.
I want to say it's about 11 years ago.
Mm. I don't think it's quite that many. I didn't write the year down. I wish I had now.
Let's go clue number two.
Clue number two?
Yeah.
We're not working as a team. Like, let's go. Let's do this.
Come on, Kez.
For 2 points. This was the first comic book movie to reach the $1 billion mark.
Mark.
Go on.
The Dark Knight.
Correct.
Oh,
yes!
Well done,
pal. Another 2 points for Mark. You're only 1 point behind Gemma now.
It's 15 years. It's either 10 or 15 years. Oh, yeah, it's 10 years right now. It's 10 years of The Dark Knight. There we go.
There you go, yeah. And the third clue for 1 point would have been, it's the first Batman movie not to have Batman in the title.
Ah.
Nice.
Yeah. So on to our fifth and final one. This is tense. This is brilliant. This is the real quiz. Because there's only 1 point in it, Mark. So you might have to go for it. You might have to punt for the first
one. That's what Corey said.
Are you ready? One of the main characters was initially going to be named Luna Larry. Oh, the silence.
How many
is
points?
Deafening.
So I have to get it on the next one to win, or one to draw.
Don't forget, there is a tiebreaker if it's a draw. Yeah,
I'd like a draw.
I could also win.
Of course, I want you to.
Is anyone going to have a pun
three
for 3 points?
No, I'm not that stupid.
No,
Mark.
I am that stupid, but I'm not going to this time.
There we go.
Okay. Clue number two for 2 points. The carpet in Sid's house has the same.
Gemma. It's Toy Story.
It is Toy Story. Gemma wins. So the full clue would have been, the carpet in Sid's house has the same hexagonal pattern as the carpet in the Overlook Hotel in The Shining.
That's awesome.
Well done, Jen.
When you see it.
And for 1 point, it would have been the world's first computer animated film.
Fair play. And because you've got engaged, as my present, I wanted to let you win.
No, I'm joking.
Can we have the tiebreaker anyway?
Yeah.
Just enjoy the game.
We can have the real quiz, right?
Yeah.
So, Gemma actually won 7-4, so Mark gets the wooden spoon. But this is the real quiz.
Yep.
So the first clue of the tiebreaker. Entire scenes were out of focus because nobody bothered to check the lens.
Mark.
Go on.
The room.
Of course it is.
Yeah.
Well done, Mark wins.
That's not the other clues, though.
The other clues were, for 2 points, when the film was submitted to Paramount Studios, they rejected it within 24 hours rather than the average 2 weeks.
I wonder why.
And the third and final clue was, a billboard for the film was erected on Highland Avenue in Los Angeles, where it remained for 5 years.
And it was something like $3,000 a week or something stupid.
It was costing Tommy some big bucks.
Yeah. It's a real Hollywood billboard.
A real Hollywood billboard.
I've enjoyed this quiz. It's been a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. It has.
Better than I thought. And I don't mind being a loser sometimes because it's just been great taking part.
It is.
So we're going to have a brand new quiz for you next time round. So those long-time listeners will remember that, 2 years ago or something, we did a quiz called Faster Mind. It was a one-off. It was when Adam was still on the show, but Gemma was on as a guest. The four of us played it together. And it was a riff, and by riff I mean blatant theft, of the BBC the BBC quiz show Mastermind, where you have a specialist subject. And we did it as a one-off. It was a bit of fun, but I want to do it again. I want to do it as a proper three-weeker, where each round, two of us play against each other with our specialist subjects, meaning we'll have two specialist subjects each. Now, the name of this quiz, of late, we've got really... really fucking bad with the names, haven't we?
That's personal opinion, Ben.
I mean, John Travolta's ridiculous.
Olivia Newton-John
was terrible. Scorey Feldman was terrible. So I purposely picked...
That was yours! You came up with Scorey Feldman.
Yeah.
I
I'm not defending it. I'm just saying, we've got really lazy with his name. So I've purposely picked the worst possible name I could come up with for our mastermind game.
I'm so happy about this.
And it's going to be called Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mastermind.
Oh! Amazing!
It's time for Skip to the Recommend, that point of the show where we give you our pop culture recommendations of the week. It can be something old, it can be something new, but it's something we're enjoying right now and we want you to enjoy it too. That's almost like a little poem.
It
I
is.
I like it.
I don't think we should talk, just leave it as that.
Yeah, it's pretty good, isn't it? Gemma, what is your recommendation this week?
Okay, so I've gone for a film that I saw earlier on the week during my time off, and it's currently showing at little independent cinemas, so unfortunately it's not on the big chains, but my God, it's worth it. My recommendation is You Were Never Really Here.
I've heard about
it.
Yeah,
me too.
But I don't know enough.
Well, you've come to the right place.
Thank fuck for that.
So it is directed and written by Lynn Ramsey, her of We Need to Talk About Kevin fame.
Great movie.
Mm-hmm. And it stars Joaquin Phoenix as Joe, a traumatised veteran who tracks down missing girls for a living. His latest job is to recover a senator's young daughter. However, the task doesn't run so smoothly. He enters into his own nightmares as a conspiracy is uncovered, leading to the life or death decision he will make. Now, I'm going to be very blunt. First things first, this film is violent.
Good.
And it tackles a very uncomfortable subject. There's also the way how it's played out, it's not to everybody's cup of tea, but I'd rather be completely honest because I, for one, friggin' loved it. I'm a big fan of We Need to Talk About Kevin and Lynn Ramsey. Oh my God, girl, you know what you're doing.
You go, girl.
You go, girl. It is a truly jaw-dropping story, which is artistically and visually incredible to watch. Joaquin Phoenix, I remember it's one of my favourite MMDs that we've done in the past. He has never been more stronger, more visceral, more organic. He is just a name that I really hope will be cemented in cinema history forever. He is overdue for another award, an Oscar even.
Yeah.
But he is living proof that he is one of the greatest actors today. The score also goes a very, very long way in the film. So the score is done by a chap called Johnny Greenwood. He of Radiohead
fame. Nice.
He does a lot of them in it, doesn't he?
He does.
He was nominated for an Oscar, wasn't he?
For Phantom Thread?
Yeah. Shit film.
So bad.
Oh dear. But the score is so fragmented, it actually like marries up beautifully with the entire film too. It kind of reflects on Joe's state of mind throughout the whole film. And it's a film that does stay with you for a good couple of days. It's an experience. You're not going to be, you know, walking out of the cinema going, should we go for ice cream? Yay! You know, this is a film that needs to be processed. It is a very, very raw film. But my goodness me, Lynn Ramsey completely delivers. She's a very exciting writer, a very exciting director. The way how it's directed is absolutely gorgeous to watch amongst the real sort of pain and blood and gore that you are going to see. But it is worth it. If it is playing in your independent cinema, please go buy a ticket now. When it comes on DVD, please watch it. Please buy a copy because films like this are not in the mainstream. There is a reason why, but please support these films. It is a mesmerizing work of art from Ms. Ramsey.
Yeah, I really want to see it. I mean, you had me at Joaquin Phoenix.
Yeah. I think if we were to do MMD today, I think this would probably be my pick.
Really?
He is just...
That's huge words.
He clearly plays a veteran that has gone through some kind of post-traumatic stress disorder.
Yeah.
So at one moment you think he's very much in control of his situation, especially when he's doing these tasks of finding these young girls. But behind closed doors, when he's in the comforts of his own home, the pain, the want of death to come to his door. It is heartbreaking. It's a real fascinating portrayal to watch, but it's a corker of a film.
I'm going to get it on DVD when it comes out.
Please do.
Can't wait.
Big time.
It's annoying that these films don't get enough exposure in the cinemas. You have to literally travel miles one night at 7 o'clock when you're at work or something. It's annoying.
Yeah.
But at least we know that these films are out there, and I think films like this do need the support of film lovers such as us.
Absolutely. So don't illegally download them. Mm-mm. Go to your local independent cinema and watch them.
Please do.
Mark, what's your recommendation this week?
I haven't done this for a while, but it's an album.
Oh, yeah.
It's from a band called Turbo Wolf from Bristol. Okay, yeah. So this is a this is a band that have got an album that's just come out called The Free Life. That's the album I want to bring as my recommendation. They've been going 10 years, this band, and they've never really made it to the mainstream, but they're doing very well now. They're starting to really get established. If you tried to ask me to describe it, I would say it's a bit like Red Fang meets Death From Above meets Royal Blood.
You got me.
It's bloody good. It really is. The track that I opened this episode today is by them. So if you like the riff you heard, invest in it. It's on Spotify. They're up and coming in the way of they're just starting to get a name for themselves at the moment. You know, there's these bands that go for sort of 10 years that never get it, but people are starting to take light. They're at festivals. They're playing only the smaller stages, but they're fucking awesome. The tracks I want to kind of point out is Cheap Magic, which actually has Sebastian from Death From Above on as vocals.
Awesome. Cool.
Domino, which has Mike from Royal Blood on as vocals. Nice. So they're getting a lot of kind of decent exposure. The industries are starting to really take note. All I can say is it's sort of 12 tracks of simplistic, solid riffs, decent guitars, decent drums. It's not trying to be anything they're not. They're a solid, decent band who've been influenced by the likes of Death From Above, and they just pay tribute in it by writing decent, solid, 3-minute songs that you're going to love instantly. Yeah.
Are they decent?
Solid.
Talking about my last turd. But no, it's honestly, solid. Guys, I know Ben will love it for the fact I said Death From Above and
Red Fang.
So
yeah.
They're great, and it's so weird when you listen to them and think these could be as big, if not bigger, than Royal Blood. And Royal Blood are right now touring with Queens of the Stone Age all over America.
Selling out arenas.
Absolutely crazy. And this band, it's weird. It's probably a bit like that. Who is that band for the documentary Dig? Remember that one band?
Dandy Warhols and the Brian Jones.
Yeah, it's like that. It's one's great and one's just not ever going to make it. So hopefully you guys listening right now will go on Spotify or iTunes or Amazon or whatever it is. Check them out and let me know your feedback on social media.
I will do, for sure. Cool. Sounds good to me.
Ben.
So I'm going to finish off with a book for the third consecutive episode, and it's a book called TV The Book, written by Alan Sepinwall and Matt Zoller-Seitz. Sepinwall and Seitz are TV critics who work for Uproxx and Vulture, respectively, and both are highly respected in their field. And what they've done is they've put together this book which lists what they see as the 100 greatest TV shows of all time, much like film critics like Roger Ebert and Leonard Maltin would put together books of the best films of all time. Each of the entries gets a mini-essay by one or both of the authors explaining what makes the show so great and the cultural impact. And it's a great read. I'm just going through it, reading it, and thinking to myself, oh shit, I need to watch The Shield again, or oh shit, I need to watch Hannibal again, or oh shit, I need to watch Oz for the first time because I've never got around to watching Oz. And even shows that I've previously never given a shit about and never considered watching, like Friday Night Lights or 24, I'm reading these essays and going, fuck me, I need to give these a go. Both authors are excellent writers. Zeitz is a bit more highbrow. He compares things to like French existentialist cinema, whereas Sepinwall is a bit more of a populist, a bit more accessible. Alan Sepinwall is a bit of a personal hero of mine. He essentially pioneered, or at least mastered, the concept of individual episode reviews. Before Sepinwall, TV critics for magazines, papers, etc. would essentially review the pilot or review the first few episodes and then make a snap judgment about the whole season based on a couple of episodes, which is a terrible thing to do because, as we all know, shows get better as they go along. The pilot, more often than not, is the worst part of a show.
Like us.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, if you
yeah.
ever listen to our first episode, Christ, you would never come back.
Don't judge us on that shit, for the love of God. Don't. Sounds like we recorded it in a toilet.
We did.
Had the best acoustics.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the other thing they would do is they would come back and maybe review the finale. So what Sepinwall kind of pioneered, along with some others, is doing individual episode reviews. And prior to that, other people might do episode recaps telling you what happened, but not any thorough analysis. And he was the first person to do it. And I remember back in the day when I first got into him, it was because I was watching shows like Lost and Mad Men and Breaking Bad. And the first thing I would do at the end of any one of those episodes is I would go and find Sepinwall's review, because he would always manage to flesh out the things that I was kind of thinking or feeling, but without being able to put into words. And he was always able to do that. So I'm a huge, huge fan of his work. He really is to TV criticism what Roger Ebert was to film criticism. I'm a big, big fan. And this book is an absolute delight. It's a great accompaniment to any television fan's viewing. So if you like TV, get this book. The one thing I would say, because Seitz and Sepinwall are both Americans, it's the top 100 American TV shows.
Okay.
So don't expect to see anything like Alan Partridge in there.
So there's no Dad's Army?
No. There
oh,
is,
no.
There is officially no Dad's Army.
Shame.
I'm not bothering then.
No.
I'm sorry,
yeah,
dude.
Yeah, Bennett. But it's an excellent book. So please, please do read it. And please go and follow Sepinwall and Zoller Seitz, because they're still out there. They're still writing TV reviews for their respective websites today.
Sounds pretty cool.
I've seen a lot come through on social media. When we put this out, I love seeing the range, because it's not just about, you know, gigs. It can be a video game, it can be an album, it can be a book, it can be a comic, it can be a recent dessert you bought from Sainsbury's.
Yep.
So what's come through this time from our good old listeners?
Well, I had two cream eclairs from Sainsbury's earlier today, which were pretty good.
Was not one for us.
I'm not gonna lie.
I'll have them both.
I had them both. The weekend.
Yeah, it's true.
Do one. The first one we have is from John Wimmer on Facebook. He said, Netflix series Dark. It's in German. I watched it with subtitles. Really good! And I've emphasised that because he's written it in all capitals with an exclamation point.
He's making a point, dude.
Apparently it is. Really good! Have either of you seen Dark on Netflix yet?
I've seen about probably 4 or 5 episodes. I've not got around to finishing it.
Yeah.
But it is really good!
Mark?
No, but it's on that one that always crops up and you would like, we think you'd like, so I'm going to give it a go.
Yeah, me too. I intend to as well. On Twitter, James Carroll at I Am Jack's Musings has said, just read a hard-boiled noir novel called The Last Good Kiss by James Crumley after being enticed by the cover. For those that like their detectives caustic, drunk and hard as nails.
Yes.
And I can understand why he was intrigued by the cover, because on the cover it has a quote by Dennis Lehane, who wrote things like Gone Baby Gone and Shutter Island, and Dennis Lehane has called it a masterpiece.
Oh, hello.
So if Dennis is saying that, must be
you know
right,
what I mean? It's up there with me saying it.
Well,
masterpiece. You know what I mean? Wow.
Not quite the same. On Instagram, KingGrimlock85 has said, Dragon Ball Fighters, a computer game out for the PS4 and Xbox One.
Cool.
Not played it, but I used to love Dragon Ball Z when I was a kid. Good
I wish
cartoon.
I had more time for games now. Not that I'm acting... I know I don't work, so I should have more time.
Yeah.
But it's, be honest, you can't sit there for 3 or 4 hours playing a game because there's just other shit to do.
Exactly.
It's annoying.
Yeah, I'd love to be a gamer, but I just haven't got the time.
No. Maybe in another life.
Yeah, why not? On Twitter, Kieran Brown at Chunky Redbeard has said, Zeitgeist the movie makes you think about the world today through religion, banking collapses, wars and terrorist attacks. And he's also said, I think Ben is more likely to have seen this, though. It is true, I have seen this. But I saw it about 10 years ago with my friend Nick, and I was ripped to the tits on magic mushrooms. So I can't.
To the tits.
I can't profess to remember it all, but it's basically a film about conspiracy theories. Have you ever seen Zeitgeist the movie?
No, and why would you have mushrooms for something like that?
Just because it.
Why not?
It makes it trippier, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Why not?
And I must stress, they were legal at
yes,
the time.
Yes, of course.
So I would never break the law.
No.
On Facebook, Simon Williams has said, you've previously discussed Battle Royal, the film. The book is so much better. And I, again, emphasise because he's put about 8 O's. So much better, in my opinion. It really goes into the sense of fear and ratchets up the tension that the film dispensed with to show more action. Well worth a read.
If we don't bring that as a rewatch, we're idiots.
Yeah, absolutely. We are going to do that soon. And I have read the book. It's by Koshin Takami. And it's very good. But in my opinion, the film is better because the book has been translated from the Japanese. And the translation is really clunky.
Right.
It doesn't flow very well, the
like
book.
But all your base are belong to us.
Yes, it's that kind of thing. Very loose sort of Google Translate type stuff. But yeah, very good book. Awesome film.
Fantastic.
On Twitter, Very Stable Fish at Bad for the Fish has said, watching Mom for further evidence that Alison Janney is a freaking national treasure.
I love that.
Yeah. Have you seen the sitcom Mom?
I've heard about this. Is this with Anna Faris?
It is indeed. Yeah. Although I won't pronounce it like that. Her name's Anna.
Oh, is it? I thought it was Anna Faris.
No, she pronounces it Anna. Oh. It's Anna, though. It's A-N-N-A. Okay. It's fucking Anna. I'm not having Anna. I won't allow it.
So I didn't just sort of, you know,
you
a date.
You didn't get it.
It
wrong. No. You got it right, but she's wrong. It's Anna.
Stop it, Faris.
Is it any good?
No.
Oh.
In my opinion, but I don't like conventional sort of sitcoms like that. You know,
but it's
like,
very popular, so it must be great.
I'm sure. On Facebook, Mark Hayward has said, Ghost in the Tanglewood, the new album from Ginger Wildheart, a nice and folky vibe to it. Ginger Wildheart from the band The Wildhearts.
Yes.
Do you remember them? They used to be in Kerrang all the time when we were kids.
And they recently played in our hometown, the singer, doing his solo tour, and it's sold out. And
really?
This venue doesn't sell out a lot. And I know that his hardcore following for probably 20 years will follow him everywhere. A bit like Frank Turner from Million Dead. If he releases something, their diehard fans will go over. A bit like Grant Nicholas from Feeder. You know, that sort of band. They will always go around. Yeah. Like Corey.
A bit like Corey, isn't it?
Yeah, because he left Truth Movement and
absolutely.
People still follow him with his own solo efforts.
Yeah, like former child actor and all that kind
all
of
goodness. That. But it's the Angels that kind of bring it.
They ground him.
Yeah.
Big time. So yeah, Mark Hayward says check out that album. On Twitter, James Gain at James Gain has said, giving The Tick a go on Amazon Prime. Really good fun so far. And as with all things he's in, the series is made at least 50% better by the inclusion of Peter Serafinowicz.
Yes, Serafinowicz.
Oh, I love him.
And I agree. And before we talk about The Tick, as I mentioned earlier when I said that Amazon Prime are listening, they most certainly are. Because when James Gain tweeted that, the official Amazon Prime Twitter then retweeted it and replied to him, in fact, and said, Serafinowicz is the man.
Oh,
Wow.
You are correct, Amazon Prime. That's Amazon Prime.
You shot me in the balls, Tim.
I love him.
Dwayne Benzie. So have we watched the new season of The Tick yet?
I have seen half of it. Mm. It is enjoyable. It's definitely worth it keeping on watching it. But yeah, Peter Serafinowicz, he is the shining star of that show.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Good bit of fun. Next one we have on Facebook, Alex Watts has said, "A fantastic woman, the winner of Best Foreign Language Film at the Oscars this year. One of the most heartbreaking movies I've ever seen. It's beautiful and tragic and should be essential viewing." Have either of you seen it?
Nope.
I'm going to watch it next week.
Oh, yeah? Mm-hmm. Oh, fantastic. Yeah, because it's a film about a trans woman played by a trans actress.
Daniela Vega.
And she appeared at the Oscars. I think she presented an award. Yeah, that looks like an interesting one. And then finally, Sam on Twitter, at Killing Joke Told, has said, "I'm absolutely loving Thought Contagion, the new single by Muse." Now, forgive me for a moment for going on a wee bit of a rant.
Here we go.
But fuck Muse and fuck Matt Bellamy from Muse, because he gave an interview to the BBC the other day where he said, and I quote, that guitars are no longer a lead instrument, they are a textural instrument, and apparently any band that plays guitar, bass and drums have one foot in the past. Fuck you, Bellamy. Your whole shtick is lead guitars. He's one of the best guitarists in the world. Am I right, Mark?
I'm so angry. We talked about this. We and Ben went to a gig this week, and we were in the car for a while, and we listened to, was it Origin of Symmetry, I think?
Yeah.
Aww.
And we were just like, this is fucking incredible. And then he told me this, and I just turned it off, because it's genuinely upset me.
Yeah.
I have so much respect for him. Plug-in Baby is all about that riff.
What about Bliss, Newborn?
Every song.
All of
every
that.
Song.
Yeah.
And now he's just gone, oh, fuck guitar. What? So Led Zeppelin, all these great bands, Nirvana, Pearl Jam, idiot.
Yeah. The thing that annoys me is it's just an excuse for him to sell out his own history and then pander to current musical trends. So apparently in their new single, they use trap beats, whatever the fuck that means. But it's just pandering to children, essentially. And it made me think of something. In 1962, the Beatles went in for an audition with Decca Records to try and get a contract. And Decca chose not to sign the Beatles because they said guitar groups are on the way out. That wasn't true in 1962, and it sure as shit ain't true now.
Please don't tell Corey Feldman about this.
Exactly right.
If he's playing guitar and stuff like, you know,
Go For It.
Yeah.
Ascension Millennium.
Ascension
Millennium. Oh, come on, the video. It's got Sean Astin in it.
Yeah,
I am furious with this. And it
has that is bullshit.
Really pissed me off because I love Muse.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And they're one of the best live bands I've ever seen. And why? Because it's the bass guitar, the drums, and his fucking exceptional voice and guitar skills. How the hell he does it together, he's the new Jeff Buckley. He's an absolute god.
Yeah. Mm.
And he's just pissed on his own fucking parade.
Yeah. So fuck Matt Bellamy.
Trap beats.
Yeah.
Trap beats.
Brilliant. Well
there
done.
We go.
Thank you.
It Nailed happens. It. Anyway, keep your recommendations coming in on Twitter at SCTE Podcast, on Facebook, facebook.com/skiptotheendpodcast, or on Instagram at skiptotheendpodcast, or you can email us if you so choose, podcast@skiptotheend.co.uk. So that brings us to the end of another episode of the Skip to the End podcast. We've had it all today. We've had births, we've had deaths, we've had marriages.
Well,
and engagements.
Engagement. Yeah. Well, that's what I meant by marriages.
Semi-marriages.
Might not get to that. You never know.
Are you that's fucking true. Kidding me?
I want you to get married more than anything. I want to be the person to give you away, but you never know.
Yeah, Kurt Russell's giving her away. He's dad.
That's true.
That would be a
you
dream.
You could officiate.
Okay, I'm cool with that.
Yeah.
Should we do that Joey thing from Friends and get like ordained online and do the actual ceremony?
We'll do a Twitter poll. Who should be the one that gives her away? Your dad, me, or Ben?
And shall we do a live podcast
where
we're just commenting on everything that's happening?
Well, like a director's commentary. I love this bit. He's about to say I do.
That would be good. And then get some T-shirts made. Cash in.
Yeah, is there any way we can make money off this wedding?
Yeah.
Because it's not worth my time otherwise. No.
Wait, let's make sure this is like a three-way bunce thing
Fair enough. Have we had any listener questions, Mark?
We've had some superb questions. Firstly, from Twitter, we've had at Brian Stever, who has said, this is quite, flows quite nicely.
Oh, we've got some
Will
synergy.
Will Pooch's wedding be movie themed? If so, what movie? Because he himself can see you walking down the aisle dressed as Pennywise.
Of course.
Well, let's throw this one to you first then, Pooch. If you had
a movie,
if in theory you had a movie themed wedding, what would it be?
Oh my god. I know that you don't like this, Ben, but I really love La La Land. And you know, just sort of going down. Mark, come on, you weeped
it's
with
me.
My
second favourite film of last year, but that's a shit choice of wedding theme.
No, not at all. Come on, like you could sort of walk down the aisle to City of Stars and then do a little dance as you're like waiting for the register to kind of like, you know, when they talk amongst themselves. Or walk down the aisle of like the Overlook Hotel.
There
the
we are.
That's better. Yeah? That's better.
And then when we're cutting the cake, rather than cutting it, we've got like the baseball bat. We're just smashing it.
Pretty good.
Yeah, that'd be ace.
Do you know, for me, I think what you should do is, you posted a picture a week or two ago of you in a Mia Wallace wig.
I did.
So I think it should be at a Pulp Fiction themed wedding.
Oh my God, Jack Rabbit Slims.
Yeah, so you'd have it at Jack Rabbit Slims. You would be Mia Wallace. Oh. Greg would be Vincent Vega. Yes. I'd be Winston Wolfe, and Mark would be the Gimp. Yes.
I'm up for it though. I am.
Oh, let's do it then. Oh, and First Dance could be the twist and like the Chuck Berry song.
Yeah.
I'd pick for you. You'd get married in McDonald's.
Here it comes.
As the guests come in, there's a bowl of Skittles.
Yeah. Well, you'd throw Skittles instead of confetti.
That'd be amazing. Yeah. Oh, he's thought about this. And then when everyone drinks, they'd have Coca-Cola instead of wine or champagne.
Yeah.
And it's Mac and me.
Amazing.
So, featuring Ronald McDonald.
Who'd be the little dancing bear on the counter?
Warwick Davis. Can I do that? Because he wore the bear outfit in Life's Too Short.
There we
Nothing
go.
Nothing to do with his size. There you go. How's that for some answers for you, Brian? The next question comes from a movie blog who has said, after the recent release of Infinity War, the trailer was good, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Who's going to die in Infinity War?
See, I want it to be Hawkeye. Well, it's not that I want it to be Hawkeye per se, because I like Jeremy Renner and I like the character, but if someone's going to die, he's the least important one, isn't he? Who gives a shit about Hawkeye?
Well, I'm going to have to agree with you. He's not shown in the trailer.
No, but neither's Ant-Man on the poster and all that.
Ant-Man's
blah, blah,
tiny.
Blah.
You're not going to see him. He's like a pin.
I think in reality, if anyone's going to die, it'll either be Tony or Cap.
Yeah, I think Captain America's going. I think his time is up.
He didn't look like he was in a very safe position in the trailer, did he?
What did we think to the trailer?
It blew my tits off, and it just shows how far Marvel are than DC. Right now, that trailer would be better than any film DC release. It's scary. They're not even in a competition anymore. No. It's just embarrassing.
Yeah, and after that trailer was released, they then did pre-release sales for tickets for Infinity War.
Jeez.
And recently, a few weeks ago, or a few months ago, Black Panther broke the record for most pre-release sales in history.
Yeah.
And now, apparently, Infinity War has then broken that record yet again.
Blimey
That's
egg.
How into it people are.
I'm looking forward to Tony Stark and Star-Lord interacting.
Yeah.
That little clip that we were given, I think that's going to be a real great partnership, so I'm looking forward to that.
The next question comes from Darren Wolf on Facebook. It seems that Annihilation's straight-to-Netflix release is down to Alex Garland's refusal to make studio-requested changes to the film. Fair play to the guy.
Yeah.
We get the director's uncut version, but it doesn't get a cinema run. Do you think this compromised release is good or bad for the future of film? It's a great question, Darren.
Yeah, it's a bit of a thinker. I think it's good for viewers, I suppose, because it means we get access to director's cuts in the comfort of our own homes. But I think it's bad for the industry as a whole if studios are having these arguments with the creators and saying, okay, you're not going to make the changes, so fuck you, we'll sell it to a streamer. All we're ever going to see at the cinema are Transformers and Fast and Furious films.
And that should not be the case, should it?
It should not be the case.
And this is why small independent films are so important to go and watch in the cinema. Sure, there's going to be some good stuff on Netflix, but again, it kind of harks back to what I said on the previous episode. It's about the experience of enjoying a film for what it's truly meant to be played on. You're meant to have the big screen. You're meant to have the surround sound.
It's such a tricky one because we still got it. So it wasn't like it just got shelved.
Yeah.
It's good that we... And he didn't take his name off it, like American History X and stuff
like
that. And I'm such in a weird position about it because I was just saying to Gemma off air, I can't wait to go home and watch Annihilation again after talking about it with us three today.
Mm.
And the fact I can do that and not have to go to the cinema and put up with dickheads and pause it, like you said, and rewind, it's such a weird one. Like Mute as well, that came straight to Netflix.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm at an advantage, I think, but... Fucking, I'm so glad that Alex did that and was brave enough to say, well, no, leave it alone. Yeah. Because too many studios ruin shit and will be basically, you'll be a bitch as a director and told what to do. So
It's tricky.
That's so tough.
That's why I think it's good for us as the consumer in the short run, but in the long term, it's bad for cinema.
Yeah.
It's also worth noting that Mudbound was recently Oscar nominated and that too was released on Netflix, which is a great film, by the way.
Yeah.
Got around to watching it. It's worth a watch.
The final question comes from Simon Armstrong. What single movie do you believe has had the single biggest impact on making you all into fans of film? All things celluloid and why?
Oh, man, that's a big
Jesus
old
Christ,
question,
man. These questions are. Can I just have a yes or no in the future, please?
Okay, so. I'm gonna. Yeah. I'm going to go for a film that was played a lot of times when I was a kid. So I'm going to go for Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Ooh.
It's because the reason I have so much love for this film is because it made me believe that a world could be created just by watching the TV screen in front of you. You could go to a chocolate factory. You could go to a small little cottage. You could end up being covered in foam, and then the next minute you're completely dry. There's a scene. There is a scene.
I remember it, yeah.
It just completely captured my imagination as a kid. And I think even however many years now, because I'm pretty old, it still does, rewatching it. It's the excitement of stepping into a new world that you're not familiar with on the everyday basis.
That's a great one.
Yeah, I get that completely. I said this at the time, I think, when we rewatched it, but for me it's Reservoir Dogs. Reservoir Dogs took me from being someone who enjoyed film on the most basic level to being a true cinephile who loved film from the creative level upwards, all the below-the-line things, cinematography, art direction, set direction, all those kind of things. That's what gave me my deep love of film.
I think growing up I just watched films, turned it off, and that was it. I didn't want to re-watch films again and again. Mm. The first time I watched John Carpenter's The Thing, I know I talk about it a lot, but it's true. It made me realise how films should be made, how suspense can be done on a low budget, but most of all the use of practical effects. I've never seen anything like it, and I talk about it every episode I can because it's my favourite film, up with Jaws. I just think John Carpenter's a genius, and it's the first film then I wanted to discover, who made this film? Right, I want to watch more by him.
Yeah.
Who did the practical effects? I want to know more.
Yeah.
Who did the score? I want to find out more. What's that synth there? It wasn't just a, oh, cool, let's turn it off and now watch something else.
Yep.
I had to now then become a freak and be obsessed by it and know everything about it. Like you do with your favourite Tarantino films, I became obsessed. And look how that's led now. I've got Halloween, I've got Big Trouble in Little China. I've discovered more and more about this guy, They Live.
Yes,
and it's
they
all
live.
Because of this.
Yeah.
So I'm so grateful for John, and I'm so grateful for that kind of genre of horror.
And fingers crossed for Halloween later this year.
I think it's going to be fucking awesome.
Me too, I'm with you, brother.
Danny McBride is behind it, and I think that guy's a genius. Yeah. The poster looks good. Everything looks good.
Yeah. Kanye!
Exactly that.
So, yeah, please keep your listener questions coming in. We've given you all the addresses earlier. If you don't remember them, please go to skiptotheend.co.uk and you'll find all of the links on there. So what have we got coming up on the next show? Mark, what's our main review? I think we're pretty jazzed about this one.
I'm literally sitting here stroking my penis as I'm saying it.
Please don't, because Gem and I are in the room.
Oh my God, he didn't even close the door.
Ready Player One. So as you know, it's a film that's a homage to most Spielberg films. It's directed by Spielberg. It's 80s themed. It's the best book I've read in 10 years. I'm pretty psyched.
The only book I've read in 10 years.
They should pretty much call it Ready Player Mark.
Yes.
This is your film.
I'm going to... But then again, this is what happens, like Blade Runner 2049. I could get shat on. It's Ben's moment for that. It's mine.
Yeah.
But
Blade Runner turned out well for me.
It did.
So this could turn out well for you.
I'm nervous.
Fingers crossed. Gemma, what's our rewatch?
We're going to be rewatching Ben Wheatley's Sightseers.
Oh, I'm so happy about
that. Me too. I cannot wait. He's had a really good track run. We enjoyed Free Fire last year. Obviously, High Rise was one of Ben's favourite films 2 years ago, I believe.
Yep.
So this is going to be a fun rewatch.
And we're going to have a fun topic as well. It's going to be our top three spoofs or parodies.
Thank you, Ben.
Oh, yeah.
So much fun. I'm so excited.
Yeah, me too.
And all the other usual goodies as well. We'll have listener questions. We'll give away great prizes. And we'll play the first round of Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mastermind.
Best game name ever.
Do you know what as well? I like juicing people up.
Yeah.
On the next episode, people will be getting our T-shirts, which
is
fucking cool.
Oh, yeah.
So you'll be starting to see tweets coming in by the time it's out. But I'm going to say it now. Our Funko prizes and the Warner Brothers prizes on the next episode is our biggest giveaway we've ever done.
Wow, I am fully juiced and entirely dangling.
Let's just leave it as that.
See you in 2 weeks.